for coming out. The meeting's been properly noticed.
Yes, it has.
And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance, if you could please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And our first order of business today is recognitions, and I'll turn the time to Dr. Iser.
Good morning. We have a bunch of recognitions today that I'm pleased to host and to have the board be a host for. So what we'll start out with is first showing the video that you see up on the screen. By the way, this gentleman is a member of the service that I served in for 24 years.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jonathan Merman, director of CDC's National Center for HIV/AIDS, viral hepatitis, STD, and TB prevention. I'd like to take this time to say happy National Disease Intervention Specialist Recognition Day to the hundreds of DIS serving across the country and to those fortunate to work with them. I've been in the field working alongside DIS and public health advisors in places ranging from HIV prevention in the streets of San Francisco to a typhoid fever epidemic in Tajikistan. So I have firsthand experience working with outstanding DIS. Originally established to work in the field of STD prevention, DIS provide ground-level skills that have become essential elements of TB outbreak response, STD and HIV exposure notification, infectious disease control, and emergency response efforts. Today, as the healthcare landscape evolves, DIS are needed to continue filling these roles, but to also link patients to care and navigate the changing healthcare landscape. I recognize the impact DIS have on reducing the burden of infectious diseases in the United States. This select group of public health employees works tirelessly, sometimes in difficult conditions. I encourage everyone to learn who these unsung heroes are, learn more about the work they do to keep us all healthy, and determine what you can do to better support their efforts. And I want to sincerely thank all DIS for the work you do day in and day out to improve the health of all Americans.
I'm Bill Smith. I'm the Executive Director at the National Coalition of STD Directors, or NCSD, and happy DIS Recognition Day. Disease intervention specialists are an incredibly important part of STD prevention work. Throughout my time serving as Executive Director of NCSD, I have been continually reminded of the imperative role that DIS play in the prevention and intervention of disease. Without you, our work would have a shorter reach, less impact, and a harder time making lasting changes. As Dr. Merman mentioned, now more than ever, DIS are being called upon to link clients to care and navigate our changing public health landscape. These responsibilities require a greater set of skills for our DIS, and at the same time, while being a DIS has already been a really demanding job. We are here to support that work and heighten dedication and commitment to DIS as part of the core of public health programs. That's why NCSD led in the development of a National DIS Recognition Day held on the first Friday in the month of October every year. NCSD is committed to continue supporting programs and events that benefit the lives and careers of our nation's disease intervention specialists. In the future, expect to see more visibility around DIS issues as we at NCSD grow the Partner Services Learning Collaborative, recruit DIS for special committees, develop a DIS certification program with partners, and further our collaboration with the DIS training centers, the prevention training centers, and others that share our philosophy regarding you, our DIS workforce. We're excited about the opportunities before us and look forward to working with all of you. And a most profound thanks to our DIS, you, the agents of change on the front lines of STD prevention in the United States. Thank you for the quality of work. Thank you for your dedication and commitment. And thank you for the passion for the public health of our nation. Keep up the great work.
Hello, I am Dr. Gail Boland,
Director of CDC's Division of STD Prevention. Prior to joining CDC, I worked in both the local and state health department. I saw firsthand the value and hard work performed by DIS and the important role they play in achieving the goal of healthier, safer people. To ensure adequate support and training are in place to effectively carry out their public health mission, I'm happy to share that CDC recently funded a 5-year Disease Intervention Specialist Training Centers Project, or DISTC. For this initiative, three organizations will provide opportunities for DIS to enhance their skills through comprehensive training, including a newly developed session on linking patients to care. Additionally, CDC is working with the National Association of County and City Health Officials and the National Coalition of STD Directors to develop a DIS certification program. This certification will help to standardize the roles of DIS and make sure they have the support and training needed to successfully do their jobs. We think this certification will also help decision makers better understand what DIS do and how critical their role is to stopping the spread of diseases in their communities. Thank you, DIS. We look forward to working with you on these projects.
So today is the day that we unsing their praises. So a double negative is try to sing their praises. Any one of you on the board and probably anyone in the audience can list a number of diseases that our DISs are involved in. Clearly you saw from a bunch of sexually transmitted diseases specialists, TB, and right now we have people involved in responding to, potentially responding to an Ebola case. So I would like Bonnie Sorensen, if you'd please come up, and Dr. Cassius Lockett. And they will, after they get up here, then we'll ask all the DISs to either stand or to come up front.
Okay, for the nursing department, would you please stand as I call your name? Elizabeth Edelman, Kim Anachkowski, Julius Arias, Haley Blake, Victoria Burris, Jason Butts, Catherine Cashett, Robert Clark, Cherie Filler, Mayata, Jennifer Gratzky, Victoria Harding, Jennifer Harmon, Kimberly Hurton, Victoria Hughes, Micah King, Arterio Murato, Katrina Miller, Brandon Osborne, Cheryl Radloff, Judy Tawato, and Candace White.
And in the Division of Community Health, we have the following disease intervention specialists. Actually, they're all standing back against the wall here. We have Zuin Q. Schultz. Yeah. We have Devin Raymond. Tammy Bruno. And Tony Frederick.
So this is our day to thank them for all the hard work that they do. I have been doing this Ebola presentation that some of you may have seen, certainly my staff has, and I have a whole page in there about what we do for contact tracing. And this is something that we do, and you all can correct me, every day of the week, pretty much every hour of every day of the week of the year. And without these folks, we certainly couldn't do the job that we can do. So it's really my personal pleasure, and I think, I know I speak for Dr. Lockett and Ms. Sorensen and Mr. Woodbury and the rest of the board, that we thank you for all of your efforts. Really, we do. Thank you. Michelle Nath, there you are. Come on up, and if you'd stand in between us. Safe Community Partnership honors Michelle Nath for enriching our quality of life in Clark County, Nevada through her unwavering support of trauma outreach in Las Vegas, her dedication to pedestrian safety at school and in the community, and her enthusiasm and dedication to keeping all road users safe. We thank her for her generous efforts, and we do have a small plaque. And again, this says essentially the same thing, and it's from the Safe Community Partnership Honors. May I hand this to you? Thank you very much. Thank you. Very much. I think of all of our employees, my memory in the last year or so is that Christina Madison has been up here at least two times before, and where is she now? Oh, behind. Come on up, please. We also have a certificate, a framed certificate for her. Dr. Christina Madison, who is our clinical pharmacist, received the Public Health Leadership Award from the Nevada Public Health Association. Dr. Madison earned this honor due to her diligence at being an effective and motivational public health leader and having shown uncommon leadership on public health issues in the state of Nevada. And so we want to congratulate you for this. And just to forewarn the board that we are likely to take on an additional program of which Dr. Madison will be an integral part. We'll talk about that when it comes time to do that, but she knows what I'm talking about. The next awardee isn't here today, so is Susan Pruitt here? There, come up. And she's accepting it for her. Our Teen Advocates for Pregnancy Prevention, or TAP program, has received the Nevada Community Program Award at the Nevada Public Health Association Conference. Amine Harvey, the health educator that mentors this group, also received the Public Health Hero Award at the same event. It's truly exciting to have this group of young people so successfully involved in making a difference in the community and working so diligently to engage their peers in efforts to increase knowledge regarding sexual health and pregnancy prevention. So we thank her for that, and thank you for accepting the award. Dr. Radloff. I don't think we have a plaque for you. Dr. Cheryl Radloff is a disease investigation and intervention specialist, of whom we just honored, has written and published the second edition of Transforming Scholarship. And would you like to say a few words?
Sure. Hi, thank you. This is the second edition, just came out in August of 2014. Really exciting. The first edition and this one as well came about. I'm also an adjunct professor of women's studies at the College of Southern Nevada. And before I came to the health district, I was a professor of women's studies at Minnesota State Mankato. So this book came about because many women's studies majors and minors were asked what they could do with the degree, and they didn't really have an answer. So we came out with a book for this. And the exciting part is I have two colleagues who are contributors in this edition. So Katie Cachet and Kim Andachowski, who are right over there, just recently recognized. Give a little shout out, so thank you. And we also have a lot of folks who are in the field of public health. And we can see people with women's studies degrees are active in public health, and they have the skills and the knowledge to be able to be good contributors to our field. So thank you.
So this isn't quite an award, but it's a recognition of the most of the Department of Environmental Health. And so, Jackie, would you please come forward? And then would the environmental health specialists come in, please?
Keep going. Always go left anyway. It's a
good thing. Don't worry about it. Do you want to do that?
Good morning. Hi, good to see you again. I'm wonderful. I woke up. Barely.
So this is the same oath essentially that each Board of Health member takes. We are awarding them their badges. Most of the environmental health specialists got their badges last week. And these were the remainders, and we wanted to do something symbolic for the entire Division of Environmental Health. So if you all can see the screens, I will go through this relatively slowly. Let me also remind you that you can either swear or affirm, depending on what you and your religion or your ethics allow you to do. So I'll give you a choice as we go along. I, and then please state your name.
I.
Do solemnly swear or affirm. That I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and the Constitution and government of the State of Nevada against all enemies, whether domestic or foreign, and that I will bear true faith, allegiance, and loyalty to the same, any ordinance, resolution, or law of any state notwithstanding, and I will well and faithfully perform all of the duties of the office of Deputy Health Officer on which I am about to enter. So you can either use either so help me God or under the pains and penalties of perjury. So I think this honors the rest of our environmental health group who are getting their badges today. I would appreciate it if, first of all, we can thank you for all of the hard work that you do. And then if you'll file out this way, you know where Peggy is, and she'll have you sign your actual oath there. So thank you very much. That concludes today's awardees and recognition, so thank you all very much.
I'm gonna figure that out.
Thank you very much. We really do appreciate all the employees of the health district, and they do well and faithfully perform their duties, and it's a great honor to stand up there and appreciate them from time to time. We will move on to a public comment period, which is devoted to items on the agenda. If you are ready to speak on any item pertaining to the agenda, please state your name. And
without looking at the agenda, my name is Tom Collins, your favorite county commissioner, and I hope it is. I wanted to thank you all, first of all, for the great job you did in the Northeast with the flooding and some other sanitary issues and things that happened in the last, you know, month or so with all the things that went on up there. And I'm sorry I didn't look at the agenda. I got two things I'd like to bring up, and if I'm out of order, you can tell me. First of all, for several months, we've been trying to get you to look at, and this is mostly staff things, but some things the board won't probably have to direct to change, is the multi-vendor uses at the at facilities where if there's something at the Speedway, there's 400 vendors or 1,400 vendors. That requires an extra inspections and permit and an event coordinator, whatever they're called. But when there's two little places, one's got hot dogs and one's got cotton candy, that doesn't require another $290 permit because they're not making that much money anyway. That's at one point. There's other people who will probably want to address that. The other one I want to address is the Clark County Water Reclamation District is at NRS GID 318. And all of the unincorporated Clark County is under their responsibility. They're any unincorporated land in Clark County. And I bring this up because Clark County is an umbrella to the five municipalities in Southern Nevada. And we do a lot of things that the municipalities don't, as far as social services, courts, jails, on and on and on, the airport. For example, City of Las Vegas doesn't even have any water to sell. It's from the water district that's run by the county. There's a lot of overlapping things that we do and share. And I want to just address people's property rights. We've got individuals that have gone out and purchased land in unincorporated Clark County, sunk their savings in it, borrowed money to build a house, all to be told that they have to annex and be forced onto a municipal sewer. Now, in some cases, this health district has waived that south of Sahara to some more I guess, more recognized citizens in our community, saying it nicely, that because that was unincorporated Clark County, this health district and the Clark County Water Reclamation District said they did not have to annex. In other parts of the valley, they're protected by the townships, and unprotected areas in Clark County in this valley have been forced to annex. And you're the one multi-agency that could address that by allowing those folks to have septic. And I understand the EPA wanting to get the water back for return credits from Lake Mead. On the other hand, there's people's rights of different regulations that they want to live under and chose to live under when they purchased that property. And that's just kind of lightly how I'd like to address that for you today, and I'll be coming back with some more ideas. But I, again, the end of the story is I want to thank you, because when we were in need in areas of Clark County, y'all stepped up in the rural areas, especially helping us out. So, again, thank you, and I hope you'll, especially the local leaders here, that you'll recognize people's property rights. Thank you. And I've got to go to the lights and turn them pink for the PBR. Have a great day.
Thank you, Commissioner Collins. If there's anyone else wishing to speak on those two items, I'm not sure they're on the agenda, but I'll go ahead and allow it today just because it seems like we've got a lot of people here. So thank you. Please state your name.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Linsenbart. I live in the Northwest. I've been a resident of Clark County since 1948. My grandparents came here in 1918. I was very, very vigorous and fought very hard for many, many years, decades, in the Northwest to protect property rights and protect the RNP and protect my property rights. I worked very, very hard to enable the county and the city to work together when the county wanted to put sewer out into the Northwest. We had money, we had staff, we had growth at the time. The city came to us and said, let's work together and allow you to hook onto our city sewer, even though you're in the county, and thousands of residents of Clark County did so. The interlocal was an intricate part of my plan for my growth for the Las Vegas Farm and Barn Buddies Rescue, of which I've been on that property since 1961. I came out there because I was eminent domained off of my property downtown for the freeway. So I've been fighting since the eminent domain to protect and secure my property rights. I was on the accepted area somehow, somewhere along the line of the last 30 years. They have taken me off of that accepted area without my knowledge. I want my property rights protected. I want to hook up to the city sewer, pay the fees, pay whatever is necessary to continue in that light and continue what I do for Clark County and the citizens of Clark County with the Las Vegas Farm. We have thousands of residents that enjoy what we do. We have been on our property longer than the Gilcrease Ranch has been across the street. They have only been there maybe 30 years. We've been there about 50. So I hope that you will do something to help us hook onto the city sewer, enable us to be safe in that manner, and secure our property rights as Clark County citizens and not force annexation. Again, I'm Sharon Linsenbart, the Las Vegas Farm, and I hope that you will do something to help us protect our rights. Thank you.
Thank you.
Board members, my name is Mary Gipaya, and I'm with Equine Event Management, and we manage Horseman's Park for Clark County. I wanted to bring up the issue of the special event permit that's required for any vendor at the our facility, and I'm sure other smaller facilities. If you have more than one vendor right now, you have to get a special event permit, coordinated permit through the health district, and that's like $260. We have small events at our park that are community related, and they might have maybe 50 to 100 people there, and they want to have a food vendor to, you know, they go on for like all day long, so they want to have a food vendor there. If they want to have maybe someone selling some hot dogs and hamburgers and then an additional person selling maybe popcorn or shave ice or something like that, they have to go, the promoter has to go and get, and most of the promoters are small nonprofit groups, horse groups that have events. They have to go pay the $260, which makes it such a financial burden, they sometimes don't have any food vendors at all, or they'll just have the one. And I think if we could maybe consider something possibly like if you have, you know, six or under, but anything over one is so restrictive that it's really a burden on our smaller groups and our community organizations to get this special event coordinator permit for anything that's got more than one vendor. And like, we're small, I mean, we're the same, we're getting the same type of permit you would for, like you said, at the Speedway or some larger events that have maybe, you know, 300 or 400 vendors, and we only have maybe two. So I would like you to consider that as possibly changing it to a little bit more reasonable number, say if you have maybe, like I say, six or under 10 or something like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Don't we have the availability of an annual permit in that category? Do we have the availability of an annual permit so that a facility could have one permit to cover for the year, multiple sub-vendors?
Yes, Jackie Resitar, Director of Environmental Health. We are restructuring our fee schedule and our plan, and we have taken that in consideration. And we just need a little bit more time to put a methodology together in order to show fairness in all areas. But we have considered that. We just haven't had time to block it out and present it to you yet. We just want the methodology correct.
But it doesn't exist today?
No.
Okay.
Chair. But we can make considerations and help in the meantime. And when it was brought to our attention with Horseman's Park, we were looking into the methodology, and we just had to go with a solid state decision.
Anyone else?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I had asked about the multi-vendor because Commissioner Collins and I think Jackie and the group are working on that. I just would like to make sure that we involve, before you even maybe bring it back to us, those smaller vendors so you can see what that impact will be on them, and they may have some ideas on how to better deal with that. Sometimes we do it from government sense rather than from where how they're running into it as a business itself or a nonprofit itself. So I would hope that we'd be able to do it that way.
And we always have public workshops that, of course, everyone will be invited to, including this category of vendors.
Anyone else wishing to speak in public comment? Thank you.
Victoria Harding, Vice President of the Union, now acting Chief Steward, as Kara has now left the union, left the district, and she's off into her own world of her own business, basically. She started her own business, so we wish her luck. So the reason I'm talking today is this is basically about Dr. Reiser's evaluation, and it's evaluation part two, because I've already spoke at his evaluation. And I spoke my piece that day. I'm not going to rehash any of that. I had three topics I talked about. There's only one particular one that I really think is the crux of everything that's kind of going wrong at the moment with the district, and that is employee morale. It's just so low. You know, we've never seen so many people buying years and wanting to leave, and just negativity out in the community, negativity within management, negativity within the employees towards management. It's just a bad environment right now. And when I woke up, I kind of wanted to come in here and rant and rave like I normally do. But I thought of something this morning, and it goes back about 14 months ago. When we restarted the Joint Labor Management Group that after our last hiatus. And it was when Dr. Madaw was here. And we actually sat down, and Bonnie was there. There were a lot of people there. And we actually talked about the tone of the district and moving forward and what we wanted to do. And it was a very different shift that we wanted to do. It was towards employees being involved, employees being valued, and I remember Bonnie very specifically stating, you guys realize what this means. This means we're going in a totally different direction than we've ever gone before. And we all looked at each other, and it was a very momentous kind of moment. We all said, yeah, we do. We all agree that the employees being involved from policies and procedures that, you know, the employees are the ones performing them, but management doesn't always know what really needs to happen on the bottom end of employees being involved. We haven't put out any employee pins, any employee recognitions in years. We haven't done that. We haven't marked people's milestones of 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, and all that. We haven't done that in years. What we did in that meeting was we set up these subcommittees to do performance evaluations, which were desperately in need of a better one. We set up a committee to work on employee morale and discuss how can we do these things? How can we have back to our way of doing, whether it be Thanksgiving, whether it be whatever, of showing how we care about the employees and that they're valued. And I remember what that felt like. And somewhere along the way, we went off track. And I'm not going to complain about where we went off track or any of that, but it made me remember this morning that we can get back there. And one of the interesting things that happened when I went home that night after the last employee evaluation with Dr. Iser is I was going through boxes that I hadn't gone through in years, and I found our old employee satisfaction survey from 2010, which is the last time we've done one. And so I'm here today. It's my commitment for the employees, for the district, to go forward with joint labor management in the same vein that we were before, of making sure that the employees matter, of doing the employee satisfaction survey, finding out where things are going wrong to try and fix that. The thing is, I need help with that because, you know, if we don't get, you know, the support that we need from the top as well and from everyone involved in the district, I just don't think we can change morale. But that's what I'm here today to say is that we've been there. We've had great days, rainbows and puppy dog tails. And we can get back there, and I really believe that we can. We just have to make the commitment to do it, and it has to be from everybody here. So that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Andy Glass. I'm the Director of Administration for the Southern Nevada Health District, and I feel compelled to respond to the board regarding some of the comments that were made by Victoria. First of all is that we very much appreciate, as the administration of this organization, the cooperation and the spirit that this organization has moved forward with under the tutelage of Dr. Iser, that we very clearly recognize that it's been a very difficult past 9 months in particular, where we've gone through things that this organization has never gone through before, but at the same time as we've gone through those very difficult times, have intimately involved employees at every level within our decisions, our decision-making process, and how we go forward during those difficult times. Since that time, and in fact, within the past several weeks, we have brought together a group of employees to advise us on what we can do to address the things that haven't happened over the course of the past couple of years, including employee recognition. In fact, just yesterday at the leadership meeting, we made a commitment that we are having an end-of-year get-together to catch us up on the employee recognition that has not happened for the past, not 1 year, not 2 years, but 4 years that employee recognition has not occurred. We have also recognized and are asking that committee to carry forward as an employee-based committee to look at ways that we can improve the morale, improve the interaction amongst all employees from each and every district building within the organization. And unfortunately, I think what's happening is that the message just hasn't gone out to every single individual in this organization. We have reinstituted the meetings of the Joint Labor Management Group, which was on hiatus during the course of negotiations, and we are bringing the performance evaluation system and other policies to the Joint Labor Management meeting, which is next week, I believe. Anyhow, the point of the whole thing is that I very much appreciate the fact that Victoria and evidently other employees don't recognize all these things that are going on, and would ask Victoria, as well as other employees, to come to myself or other members of the leadership team, their supervision, or I'm sure Dr. Iser, to express those things before they come to the board. With that, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jackie Resitar, Director of Environmental Health. I just want to show you that these badges are a symbol of a recognition of how we treat our employees and how we boost them and lift them up for what they do on a daily basis. We also had a picnic on the 11th of October at Craig Ranch Park. It was outstanding. It was an environmental health picnic, and just the way everybody came together as a team and as a family, it was great. So morale is kicking in on everybody's part. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Could I ask,
Mr. Chair?
I have a question.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
usually during public comment, we don't respond to employees, so this is fairly unusual. But I would remind that we did talk about doing an assessment of the employees for satisfaction survey. So I think that that should just be something that's out there so you have a measurement tool, as we all discussed, and then looking back at the old one, if we needed to have a benchmark to be able to move forward. So that's fairly unusual, but I'm compelled to speak as well. Thank you.
Could I?
Yes,
go ahead. I was going to wait to after these two speakers, Chris, but along the same line as what Chris said, I think it's very easy when you're at top of administration to sometimes not be aware of how much the little things mean. And Victoria, I don't know why she wouldn't be aware, because she represents a large group, doesn't she? Aware of what the steps that you're taking. So I think it's really important to communicate this. And I think it's really, just from within the city and seeing what happens when we went through all that cutback and what it did to morale, and I would be told certain things and I would know they were true. And when you talk with the administration, the top people who are involved, sometimes they're not aware. And I reemphasize what Chris said, that we do need to have some type of survey, some type to let us know. Is Victoria still here? I just wanted to ask, are you aware of what's happening? Do you think we're starting to turn the corner? Because I know there's a great anxiety to turn it as fast as possible. Do you feel this is occurring?
This started occurring after I spoke out at Dr. Iser's evaluation, which I think was the first time they really knew how bad it was, because we were kind of keeping it quiet.
Well, that's good then. You spoke up, and that's really good then, because you're beginning to quickly address it. I have found in the groups with whom I'm working now that the morale problem from what happened when we had to cut and when all these other things came really hurt our workers' morale a lot more than we perhaps realized. So thank you. I just wanted to know, and that's good. We're on the right track.
Thanks for your patience. And just before you go, I'll ask you to be patient just a second longer. I just caution the board that, you know, it's okay to ask for information, but responding to comments, just be careful that we don't do that during the public comment session.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to address, since you brought it up, I did make available to Andy and to the staff our two people at Boyd Gaming that are responsible for our annual survey process, and I know they've reached out to them. So I wanted you to know I did my part to, you know, make sure that they had other outside resources that they could tap into.
Thank you, Bill.
And if I may speak up, too, this did not occur just 3 weeks ago. I hope you all recognize, and at least I've been told, that the recognitions that we do at this meeting hadn't ever occurred before. So recognizing employees, honoring their work has been going on at least since I've been here, maybe under Dr. Middow as well. So I would hope that you wouldn't believe inaccuracies that are being told to you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in public comment? All right, seeing none, we will move on to our item number 2 on the agenda, adoption of the October 23rd agenda. Do we have any discussion?
Move to accept.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that motion carries. We'll move to the consent agenda. Any discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries. We're on to number Roman numeral 4, the public hearing action. Item number 1, memorandum number 10-14, consider approve application to modify a permit for Apex Regional Landfill and direct staff accordingly. We'll be taking this one.
Good morning. I'm Walter Ross. I'm an environmental health engineer and supervisor with the Environmental Health Division. Apex Regional Landfill It's located approximately 15 miles north of Las Vegas, near the intersection of I-15 and Highway 93. It has met the requirements for a Class 1 site as specified in the regulations. Solid waste proposed for acceptance is listed on page 2 of this Board of Health memorandum. And the permit application also. It includes most of the solid waste disposed from within the Las Vegas Valley jurisdictions. Multiple environmental compliance staff members reviewed the more than 1,000-page permit application document, contributed to much of the plan review process, and followed through with the review and comment resolution. This modification combines historical submittals and updates since the initial permit issued in 1994 for the site, updates owner and permittee information, increases the disposal area to over 1,700 acres, although the fill space capacity of approximately 865 million cubic yards has not changed from the initial permit. Attachment I of this memorandum displays the enormous footprint of this area, which has been one of the largest landfills in the nation. There is and will be submittals to the Health District, SNHD, for review of plans, specifications, and construction quality assurance reporting for future waste management areas. This modification also increases immensely the estimated site life from the previous estimate of year 2084 to hundreds of years forward. And more than 90% of the landfill's airspace remains. The modification incorporates the existing Class 3 into this Class 1 disposal site and conforms to the current SNHD permit application format that has been required of other landfill modifications coming forth to the board in the last 5 years. The modification provides for a landfill gas collection and control system design plan consisting of a recovery system which connects to an on-site gas treatment facility for export to a nearby electric power generation plant. It also includes a leachate management plan that describes collection of that leachate for dust control and evaporation. It extends an existing alternative liner design approval. It provides for groundwater monitoring, outlining ongoing periodic sampling and analysis. This location in the dry lake hydrographic area includes groundwater depths well over 400 feet below the ground surface near the boundaries of the disposal area. And finally, it provides for stormwater runoff and run-on control with conformance to the NDEP stormwater permitting requirements. In conclusion, properly designed and operated landfills are permitted to ensure the protection of public health and the environment, including air and water quality. A comprehensive permit application has been submitted and reviewed. Therefore, staff recommends that, subject to the conditions under Part 3 recommendations of this Memorandum Number 10-14, the Apex Regional Landfill be issued a modification to the existing permit to operate this solid waste management facility as a Class 1 disposal site at this location. Present today are Bob Coyle and Mark Klinker, representing Republic Dumpco, Inc. And they are present to answer any questions you might have. Thank you. And since it hasn't been mentioned, happy sesquicentennial next week to the Silver State.
Thank you. Any discussion or questions? Chris?
Thank you. You're currently Class 3 or you're Class 2?
Commissioner Bob Coyle with Republic Services. We are currently a Class 1 landfill.
Class 1, okay.
We manage between 7,000 and 8,000 tons of Clark County waste daily. And the purpose for this permit modification that is that the landfill's been open since 1994 when the original permit was issued. Over the last 20 years, periodically things just change a little bit from an engineering standpoint, from a management standpoint. A year and a half to 2 years ago, the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection recommended to both the Southern Nevada Health District staff as well as our staff that we submit a new permit with all of the modifications, the minor ones that have taken place over the last 20 years, so that we have a new up-to-date permit.
Okay, and that's what triggered it. I couldn't remember when, because I heard Wally say something about Class 3. So if I look at the closure document, it's a projected total of $34 million over pre- and post-closure dollars, if I look at the memo that's included. And that might be to Wally first.
Commissioners, yes. Mark Klinker, I'm the general manager at the Apex. You know, that number sounds right. I can go back and review that.
Can someone just explain, do you then have to post a bond of some sort? What does it mean to have a closure dollar amount there? Then what do we have as an expectation?
That's both an EPA as well as a Southern Nevada Health District requirement, and we do post a bond to guarantee that, and that's in current dollars. That number is updated annually. Okay. For the health district, we were required to submit a new post-closure plan, and so that number is evaluated annually based on current operating conditions.
Okay, because it had mentioned something about 2009 cost updated. Is that the update from that date then? Is that what occurred?
Yes, that would be
okay,
correct.
Okay, so that's why. So you rolled that up from the 2009 numbers because those were old numbers on the pre-closure part.
That's
correct. Now you're looking at it, whatever that dollar amount is in 2014 dollars.
That is correct.
Okay. And then you have a disposal of 1,700 acres, but your space used is how many? 800?
Well, there's a total of 2,200 acres out there. The permitted footprint for the landfill is approximately 1,700 acres, and what's your operating area right now, about 400?
300 acres.
300. Okay. And you're doing the methane gas collection, I think I remember, right? You put in and so is that what you're selling, or is there a different
We have a partner that operates the plant. We mine the gas. We pull the gas out of the landfill, transport it to a point where we clean out the hydrogen sulfide, and then give the clean glass to our partner who operates two Caterpillar engines generating roughly 8 megawatts of power, and that's sold to them.
Okay, is that gasification? Is that the term, or is that a different term?
Gasification is a different process.
Okay, all right. And then how much waste are we taking in from California?
There is a little bit that comes in from San Bernardino County just across the state line. Beyond that, we're not taking anything.
Okay. Are there plans to take from other states at this point or anyplace else?
We don't have any plans. If you want an update on Los Angeles, their waste figures have dropped by about 40% as a result of the recession. Their largest landfill closed in October of 2013. And the remaining landfills have been able to accept the waste volumes, and it does not appear that the Los Angeles County Sanitation District had a desert landfill in Imperial County. They were planning on railing waste out to that site. They have totally shut down the waste by rail project.
Thank you. And then the liner, it's a lined landfill, correct?
That is correct.
And what acreage? You haven't lined the whole 2,200, I'm assuming.
No. The 300 acres that's operational that Mark talked about, that is all lined. And we are, you know, continuing to fill on top. Mark is in the process of developing what's referred to as the next cell, which is 25 acres, roughly.
20, you would 20 have to acres, line that component.
That's when we line it, and that's when the health district comes out and inspects the lining,
okay,
the process, and they're involved in approving the construction plans.
And then
over the life of the site, we'll eventually just in 20-acre or more
increments,
less increments,
so to speak.
Mm-hmm. We'll build the whole 1,700 acres out.
Okay. And then the process plan that I noticed, I don't see where you have the recycling being separated. It doesn't seem to be in the diagram that you have. Is there? Can you explain how that works?
The recycling is all done at the plant in North Las Vegas, one of the two plants, either our Gowan Street facility or our Accurate Drive facility. So there's really no significant recycling going on at the landfill.
But if I'm not mistaken, by franchise, if there's any, there's a certain percentage of trash that goes in the recycling, you have the ability as the franchisee to just take it straight to Apex. Does that happen?
Can you give me that question again? Actually understand.
And I may not be articulating it well. As a franchisee, you have a little bit different flexibility than some of the smaller recyclers. If there's trash that's thrown a certain percentage into a recycling bin, for example, you have as the franchisee the ability to just take it directly to Apex. You don't have to take it to the recycling plant.
We take all of the curbside residential recycling as well as the commercial recycling that we collect in our recycling trucks, all goes to the recycling facility. It is processed there. Approximately 10-12% of the recyclables are contaminated, and they go into a compactor and then go back to the Cheyenne transfer station, and they're transported to Apex as waste. And the commercial recycling sector, about 50% of the material that's in commercial recycling containers is contaminated, and that material is pulled off during the sorting process and then is put into the compactor, taken to Cheyenne, and then is transported to Apex as waste.
And then finally, are you still doing commodity? How is your recycling commodity? Yeah, it had been high. It went down during the time, the cardboard and such that you were sending to
Commissioner,
China.
I can't answer that question. I haven't looked at commodity pricing in a while. It has stabilized. However, it is significantly lower than it was in 2006, 2007. By way of example, the best example is that if you go back to 2005 to 2007, the Chinese were soaking up probably 50% of the worldwide scrap steel market for the Beijing Olympics in 2008. When all that construction was done, scrap steel dropped from about $350 a ton down to the $30 to $35 a ton rate. So as the recession hit, overall pricing for, if you looked at a blended sales price for recyclable materials, newspaper, cardboard, scrap steel, aluminum, we sell for approximately $110 to $115 a ton on a blended rate, mm-hmm. and our processing cost is about $90 to $95 a ton. And that $110 to $115 has pretty well stabilized since 2009, and we haven't seen any significant increase.
Okay, and then finally, does county fire oversee your fire plan, or how does that work? Right, isn't there a fire plan that was submitted as well?
We're issued all our permits from the county fire department.
Okay, all right, that's who. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I can.
Thank you. Yes.
Sorry. Well, I just wanted to go back a couple things just real briefly. Recycling report on some of Chris G's points. Recycling report has displayed increasing percentages over the last five years. SNHD does not oversee the franchise agreement issues. Recycling offsite. I understand there's a proposed largest recycling center groundbreaking ceremony coming up, so we're going in the right direction. Regarding your point on the existing and future waste management areas, Attachment I has a footprint, albeit on an 8.5 by 11. And if you look closely, it displays on the east, MA-East, where the existing waste management areas have been constructed. Currently, we're reviewing MA-11 on the bottom of the east portion, and we're reviewing that for this facility, and that's planned to be constructed, I believe, in 2015. And finally, normally, given a consistent closure and post-closure plan, annual updates to the financial assurance instrument would be in the form of inflation. And just want to make those comments.
Okay, thank you. And map I is very helpful. So it's those cells that are drawn out in that in those circle areas then. Okay, thank you.
Doug?
Chris had answered or asked most of my questions, but I do have just a couple. On the financial assurance portion of the document, the most recent one I saw was for 2012. You had a 2010 and a 2012 financial assurance documents that were in the actual application. What wouldn't 14 have should have been in there, I would have thought?
I don't have that. I can get back to you on what the latest financial assurance instrument update is and if there would be a requirement to have it update. But at any time, we can certainly have that done by requiring it from Republic.
Right. Well, my understanding is there would have to be updated annually.
Yes.
But I was just curious why.
If there's a need for an update, it would be annually. Right. If there would be a change in inflation, and it would require that, right?
Well, at minimum, you have to adjust the bond to inflation. That's per the NRS. But again, like I said, I was just a little curious, why we've got something a couple years old. I looked at the closure plan, nice closure plan, but 5 years old. I would have thought, again, something a little more current would have been relevant for coming in and asking for a 471-year landfill. It's a significant amount of increase.
Well, we don't look at the life as that's an estimation. We don't look at that as part of the design criteria. But it's nice to have an estimate to have out there, especially in communities that have restricted space. But I can definitely follow up on the financial insurance and communicate to the board or to yourself on the current status. And again, it's looked at in January or at the beginning of the year by our compliance portion, and they will require it as needed.
And my last question on just the process flow. Mr. Coyle, you said that most of the recycling goes on currently at the Gowan facility. There's a big construction project going on in the valley. My understanding is the people who are doing the construction project can bring their debris right straight out to Apex for disposal, that there is no requirement that they take it over to Gowan. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Dopine. If they want to haul the construction waste themselves, they are more than they are allowed to haul it.
So from that debris that comes in there in that format, there's essentially no recycling that's being done on that.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yep.
Mr. Beers.
You mentioned that that Los Angeles Basin has seen its waste stream down 40%, I think, from the peak. How's ours done?
That is correct, Council Member. From our peak in 2007, we were at approximately 4.3 million tons for the year, and last year we were at about 2.1 million tons. So when you look at airspace and life of a landfill, you're basing it on today's current tonnage. So in essence, from that drop from 2007 until 2013, we've doubled the size of the landfill. We've doubled the life of the landfill in terms of airspace. If that tonnage goes back to 4 million a year, then the life of the landfill is much slower.
Yes, Mary Beth.
Is that just solid waste? That didn't include the recycling efforts?
Commissioner, that's correct. The 2.1 million tons I referred to were the annual incoming tons that Mark and his team processed last year. So
that would be a combination of reduction in overall waste produced by our community and increases, hopefully increases in recycling.
Yes, that's correct. If I remember my tonnage numbers, we increased from around 77,000 tons of recycling in 2012 to approximately 82,000 tons that we moved. Okay, that does not include the contamination. It just that is the product that we sold and or sent to a recyclable facility, an end user, in 2013.
Well, I feel obligated to offer a small apology to the board since our children have moved out. Our volume of recycling and garbage has gone way down.
I don't know. I've got my boots on, Bob.
Tim.
Where are we in the community with having the single bin recycling for residential, and is that going to have any impact on the amount coming into the plant?
Mr. Jones, there's 165,000 homes that are currently on the single bin or all-in-one recycling program or single stream or commingled recycling program, all the different names that it has. The Clark County Commission approved moving forward with converting the entire county on November 13th, 2013. The city of Las Vegas is going to be considering it at some point in the future after medical marijuana is completed. we've provided the city with the documents in order to move forward earlier this year, and obviously all the activity surrounding medical marijuana has just kind of slowed that process down. We expect the city will move forward with a decision in the next several months. In the meantime, once the county approved the program, we immediately finalized draft construction of a brand new material recovery facility or recycling processing center that will cost $30 million. It will be the largest residential recycling processing center in the United States of America. You're all welcome to our groundbreaking to get your shoes dirty on November 6th at 10:30 in the morning with Mayor John Lee. He'll be our keynote speaker, and the ceremonies will be short, should be finished about 11:20, 11:25, and we'll be having lunch served until 1 o'clock. But we're extremely excited about that. We anticipate construction will take approximately 1 year. We'll be in startup mode late August of 2015 and should be fully operational in September 2015. Our existing recycling processing center is at full capacity now, so we can't deliver any more carts or implement the single stream program for any more homes in the community until this new one is built. But as soon as it's built, we'll be at 50% of capacity at the new one, and we will want to implement as quickly as possible. And we hope to, assuming the city approves the program, we hope to complete the city and county implementation within 3 years or roughly the end of 2019.
And overall, that will have some impact. If the stream was the same as it is today, there would be less demand for space in the landfill, or
that is correct. When we put a community or a neighborhood on the single stream recycling program, we see the recycling impact go from 3 or 4% up to 25 or 30%, and that's simply because more people participate. The old red, white, and blue crate program is just very inconvenient. It's every other week. People forget which week is my week. They give up fairly quickly. With the new program with trash and recycling on the same day of the week, every week we see participation rates go from 10 to 15% with the red, white, and blue crates to 95 to 100% on any given week.
Good.
So is any of that prospective impact included in the plan today?
No. That the life cycle of the landfill, the 800 years.
Yeah, we calculate it on an annual basis anyway. It's a function of density, also of the waste, the type of waste we take in. So that number changes continually.
The predecessor company that Republic bought in 1997, working with Clark County did an excellent job of planning for the solid waste needs of the county for years and years to come. They found a remote site completely surrounded by ridges that doesn't impact anybody. Even if residential were to build just outside of the landfill, you would never know that the landfill is there. So the county and the company did a good job of planning this. In the solid waste industry, you just take, here's the amount of airspace I have, here's the amount of trash I took in last year, divide one into the other, and you come out with 800 years. Now, being an environmentalist, being the guy that's led the charge on the recycling programs, particularly in Henderson, North Las Vegas, and the county, and now the city of Las Vegas, I always tell this story. If you believe that landfills will be here in 800 years, even though we've planned for it, in 1930, the first computer was built, UNIVAC. It was a 10-story building in New York City. Today, some 80 years later, the thing I'm holding in my hand is 100 times more powerful. In 80 years, we've gone from a 10-story building to an iPhone 4S. If you were to ask me, do I believe there will be landfills in 800 years, the answer is no. There will be some huge technological breakthrough to be able to take waste, turn it into energy at an extremely reasonable cost, and the need for landfills will go away. However, in the permit, we take the acres, we take our current tons, and that's where that 800 years comes from.
Anyone else? Just had a point of clarification. I think you had mentioned earlier that the size of the envelope is increasing, but not the overall volume or
yes.
something to that effect. Could
the
you?
Area is more than the initial permit, but the fill capacity is the same.
And
for airspace.
Is that area increasing in this permit, or has that already been done in the past? Where did we go from to start, and where are we at now?
Well, exact footprint, I'd have to look at the initial permit app. The current footprint is, again, displayed in general on attachment I.
That's the 1,700?
Yes.
And so you don't know how much we're increasing on this permit?
Approximately 500 acres. It was 1,200 and some acres on the initial permit and 1,722 in this permit.
Okay. And what's the? Can you explain the justification for increasing that?
Well, the reality is we have the 2,200 acres, so we still have about 500 acres of open space, if you will. We're just not going as high. So the previous plans had us going up to a much higher elevation. We've lowered that elevation and spread it out.
Okay, so that's your internal engineering plans then, right?
That is correct, Mr.
Woodbury. You're still
permitted
to go higher if you wanted to.
That's correct, Councilmember.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, if not, I will entertain a motion.
Public hearing.
Okay, we have a public hearing, so would accept public comments on this item. Anyone wishing to speak? Close public comments and bring it back to the board for action.
I'd like to make a motion for approval with staff conditions and two additional, that we provide an updated closure plan and financial assurance in the document.
Updated closure plan in what regard?
Well, the one that's in the existing application is from 2009. And it may not need to be updated, but I would
not
like
sure
to
not sure the plan
this.
Would need to be updated. I can tell you, again, if you're going to bring this up again, if you look in paragraph 2 of the memo, this application did first come in 2012, so some of the documents, including financial assurance, would be representative of that time frame. And again, it is our regulatory responsibility, and through our compliance portion of our program, of our section, to review annual updates to the financial assurance. So that would be a part of our responsibility. Anyways, and I'm not sure if one of the conditions reemphasized that. But,
Doug, are you saying they haven't reviewed financial assurance for the last 5 years? Or
I'm
what?
Saying I don't know, okay. Based on what's in front of me in the application. I'm going to assume, knowing Mr. Ross, that he certainly has. I would just like to see some of this. And even if the plan was submitted in 2012, you're still looking at a three-year-old closure plan. And I just want to make sure that that plan is still acceptable with the changes that, you know, have happened.
Okay. We can add a condition. You're asking for a condition of the permit apart from the conditions that are in the memo regarding assure updated closure plan and reemphasizing the regulatory requirement for annual financial assurance updates.
Yes.
Do the representatives Apex know?
We have updated the financial assurance. We do that annually. We did submit this originally parts of this permit in 2012, and it continued to answer questions. I believe we also have an updated closure plan, so we can provide those very quickly. I don't think that's.
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Not a problem.
Okay. Do you want to restate your motion then?
I'd like to move that we approve the Class 1 landfill, accepting all staff's conditions, and then with two additional conditions that we provide an update assurance of the financial assurance and of the closure plan.
Okay. I have a motion. Any further discussion? Do I have a second? Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I just wanted to say, if you, Doug, you could look at condition 13 and we could tweak that a little bit, because okay. That does directly address your concern.
Thanks. Board members, on behalf of Republic Service, we appreciate your vote, and we'll be taking care of the environment for a long time to come. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And on the side, Mr. Coyle, I look forward to being able to put a banana in my Tesla and drive off into the future.
Could happen.
Just one last thing. If anybody on the board would like to visit the facility, we have an open invitation. We do tours all the time with a lot of community members, schools, homeschools, college. You're all welcome, and we can accommodate you fairly quick notice.
Thank you very much.
And if you'd like to work through Wally right, to do that, we'd be happy to arrange that for you.
All right. Thank you. We will move on to item number 5, report discussion action. First item, review and discuss the 3-year budget projection.
Mr. Chair, as an introduction, we have gone through the same process that we have from the very beginning when we've looked at budgets. And that is actually to assure that our employees know what's going on and what we'll be presenting to you before we present it to you, so that nothing is a surprise. So our initial meeting was with the Finance Committee with Mr. Beers as chair, and we presented this updated 3-year budget projection. We then had a meeting with all the supervisors and managers invited, in which we did the same thing. And then we had an all-staff meeting in which we did the exact same thing. We actually had 3 items on that agenda. We did a building update for our all-staff. We did the 3-year projection, and I did a presentation on what is the most current thing today? Ebola. So that happened, I believe, last week. And then I'll turn it over to Mr. Glass to show you this projection.
As Dr. Iser stated, we made the presentation to the Finance Committee, and one of the recommendations of the Finance Committee was to remind the board, when we do this presentation, of the 5 reserve funds that we have included within the budget. These reserve funds are each funded through the general budget, which you approve every year, and certain amounts are appropriated to each one of these funds. And what I've done with this slide is to show the year-end amounts of money that are in each of those 5 funds and where we anticipate being at the end of 2015, given the board approvals for progressing with the reserve funds. In addition, I was asked to present the general assumptions that were used in the putting together of this budget. The first is that the property tax allocation increase of 3% per year with each one of these years that you will see for 2015, 2016, and 2017, that we have, since the budget was put together and approved for 2015, received notification of grants totaling $2.7 million over the course of the next several years, which are included within these projections. Also, that we included the 2.5% salary adjustment, which is actually a step increase for employees. In addition to that, the $744,000, which the board approved for each year for maternal child health programs, with the construction and move to a new facility, we will decrease our lease expenditures over that period of time. And finally, to make sure that the board is cognizant that going through accreditation, there is actually a $48,000 fee, which will be paid over the course of those 3 years. If I can draw your attention to what we're really going to be looking at, and I think the important thing in going through the four scenarios that we're going to present is actually the percentage, the ending fund balance percentage that we are going to experience in any one of these projections. The important thing with that is that by NRS, we are required to maintain a 4% ending fund balance, that by board direction, we are currently directed to have between a 16.5% to a 25% ending fund balance. So that those numbers are the numbers that we closely pay attention to as we develop the budget. The second thing that I would like to draw your attention to is that we are looking at 3 years, the projections for 2015, 2016, and 2017. In those years, the major changes that we're going to be making are in the amount of monies that we transfer to the proprietary fund, which is actually the lab fund, and you saw that on the previous reserve fund slide that I showed. The second thing is the bond reserve fund, which is actually the building fund. And then we've also projected, since we know we're going to be expending the bond fund, creating another fund, which on these slides is going to be called a sinking fund, but we'll talk about that at the end of the presentation. We also made changes in how we're going to contribute to either the bond reserve or the building fund and the proprietary fund, which is the laboratory fund. This is scenario A, in which we are making no contributions to the proprietary fund for 2015. We are contributing $2.1 million in 2016 and $1.06 million in 2017. And you can see how these will change as we go into scenario B. We're making no contribution to the proprietary fund in 2015. In 2016, we continue at $2.1 million and decrease to $1.0 in 2017. But at the same time, for the building fund, decrease from $1.3 million in 2015 and 2016 to zero in 2017. In scenario C, we make different allocations for the bond reserve or building fund, proprietary fund, going from nothing to fully funding the laboratory in 2016 and not funding the laboratory at all in 2017. The building fund continues at $1.3 million in 2015 and 16, nothing in 2017. But what we have done is shown a contribution to the sinking fund in 2017 of just under $400,000. And then in scenario D, we make some additional changes, decreasing the amount of money that we're contributing to the laboratory in 2016 and 2017. The important thing, again, is to recognize that we, in all cases, in each of the scenarios, do have a bottom line percentage which exceeds the NRS minimum, but at the same time falls, for the most part, way short of what the board has asked us to contribute and to make sure that we have as an ending fund balance in moving forward. And that actually becomes the money that is used to fund future years. With that, are there any questions concerning this presentation?
Thank you. Just a couple of things. Do any other governments do what we're calling a sinking fund?
Well, I'll go to the next slide then. We actually right now have a way of setting aside money to go to the building fund. And what we've recognized is that once we deplete that with the construction of and move into our building, what we're going to need is some money to go forward to either purchase additional properties that we might need to purchase in the future, or that we are actually going to need to do major improvements to the buildings that we currently own, whether it be a roof or the air conditioning, or buy a new building at the end of that at the end of that useful life of that particular building. That's why the term sinking fund was brought into play. Now, sinking fund has a very specific definition in financial terms, and you'll see that on the center of this page. And a sinking fund is actually very similar to a depreciation fund, with the from the financial standpoint, from the accountant standpoint, it's viewed as an investment fund. You're actually investing those funds to be able to use the funds at the end of the useful life of the building to purchase a new building.
So this sinking fund is geared just solely towards the building, not your standard depreciation for other...
That's usually how it's determined.
But we've never created one before.
That's correct.
So you're asking us to look at creating one. I'm not saying it's not a bad idea. I always thought we should have depreciation in our government budgets, but we never had the luxury of additional monies to actually do that. And so I think we have to be cautious, understanding that we've got program needs that are out there that might not necessarily cause us to have to start putting money now in, but conceptually makes sense. I just don't know of any other governments, unfortunately, that do this. Are you aware of any in Southern Nevada, at least?
No.
Okay, I didn't think.
But what I will say is that we currently have a bond reserve fund, which we have defined as the board. And actually, the definition that you see as the last definition was actually created by board resolution in 2010. We could continue with that bond reserve fund, either changing the definition to suit our particular needs or just keeping it the way that it is. But what it would do would ensure that we have monies as we go into the future that are set aside that we can grab to do any acquisitions or major repairs that are necessary, much like a depreciation fund.
And that might make better sense right now with the budget crunch, but I understand trying to set something aside. But again, people don't pay taxes just to create funds to be able to sit there to use when and if, but be that as it may. Does any of this anticipate the collections that we're talking about setting up for nursing and some of the program areas that we currently don't have in place? I know the state of Nevada had offered to kind of help with that, and I think we talked about it at the last board meeting.
We actually have included any of the income that we receive, any of the revenues that we're currently receiving. It's very difficult to predict that, though, so that what we did was we carried forward at our current rate. We would hope to see that improve, but there's no real good way to anticipate that.
But we have the. Do we have the mechanism in place now to start billing for those?
Absolutely, absolutely. We currently bill a little over $2 million. We have a little over $2 million in billings that we do bill insurers for the services that we provide.
Maybe I just need to clarify, because I remember Bonnie came up and I remember talking to Richard Whitley from the state about the additional capacity for us to bill in other areas that we currently aren't. So is, maybe I'm not being clear.
That is actually correct. Again, as Mr. Glass pointed out, is that we can't predict what those will be because a medical office of any kind, and I look at my doctors, bills a certain amount but only receives back so much. So
sure
it's difficult to do.
The capability in place.
Yes, we do, and we are working with the state who is supposed to be supplying us some technical resources
okay,
on
so
that
that's
area.
Still in there, but you don't, I understand not having it in the
right.
budget, but I would like to anticipate so we don't lose sight that there is a way to gather
sure.
some additional revenue down the road that could go into the filling of the budget.
Absolutely, and we don't anticipate grants that we've applied for but
right.
have not received
exactly.
in exactly the same way.
And then EH, what did they have in their budget carry over last year?
They are a zero out balance at the end of their year. If we look at their individual budget, they zero out.
But they didn't. There was a carryover. So what was that dollar amount? I thought it was on $13 million or something.
I'm not aware of a carryover for EH.
I don't believe there's any carryover.
How about the year before?
I don't know. I wasn't here, so I don't remember that.
I don't know of any carryover.
There's always a budget, because even though we didn't set it up completely as an enterprise fund, it was to be a self-funded fund.
It hasn't been, and I think up until this year, we actually have been using 80-10 dollars to supplement for the indirect. So there, as far as I know, there has not been any carryover from year to year.
In 2014, we know that there is a deficit of somewhere right around $30,000, about between 30 and 33, which is the 80-10 funds that go to support those programs.
So what is the total generated then for EH currently?
Mr. Chair?
Or if we could provide that.
I didn't interrupt for just a moment. Could I get a little IT help over here?
Thank you. Maybe you could provide that. It's not pertinent to today, I don't think, but I would like to see what EH had, because I'm anticipating what the potential increases will be on business in this community for EH, and I want to know what that impact could possibly be on them. So
we're very interested in that, too.
Well, yeah, because
we're being very cautious with going through, and there are a number of things happening at the same time, including taking a look at how we're building in that exact structure.
Okay. So maybe go back a couple. I'd like you to see what we had been generating. I just don't have that in front of me for maybe the last 4 years, so I can see what that depletion has
sure.
been. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Bob, then Tim.
I think that Commissioner Giunchiglione, the Budget Committee was looking more at the long-term.
Mm-hmm.
piece of this. I think actually the creation of the building fund or the bond reserve fund stands unique amongst our recent Southern Nevada local government funding mechanisms. We were just screaming along with such expansion that we had no choice but to just go out and borrow for capital assets. Yeah, you're right. Of course, in that environment, sinking funds were never discussed, but we were kind of an outlier in the world of government finance for a long time because we were growing so fast and so furious. This is kind of more of a traditional, if you were to get a governmental accounting emphasis and an accounting degree, this would all be in your second year test.
Oh, good, I'd pass.
Tim.
It seems to me that when we passed budget in April, that category that was funding for EH was something on the order of $21 million of income and a direct expense in the range of like $16 million, not including the overhead for administrative costs. So I think
that sounds roughly correct
to
me.
Those numbers are kind of balanced with what we're talking about.
Right,
today.
And that's roughly correct. For our indirect, we generally have a 25%. I can't tell you exactly what it is for environmental health, but it's division by division. We can do it program by program, but indeed that's correct.
And then
I believe.
My other question with regard to operating a sinking fund, an alternative would be to bond as necessary. Let's say that in the future you got to have a roof to a bond for that. So that sort of has the effect of present-day users paying for the new roof rather than today's people paying for a roof 10 years from now. if that makes any sense.
Well, and actually with the bond, it would be future users paying for the money that we'd be borrowing.
Yep. So it's the benefit of the new roof.
That's right.
We're paying their bond.
It's one of those relative things, you know, how you look at it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think the big takeaway that I got out of this, two of them. One, looking at any of the alternative operating fund, general operating fund summary documents, the revenue line is bigger or smaller than the total operating expenditures line. So on an ongoing basis, we're running at a loss. That'll last as long as we have cash, which brings us to the other major takeaway, which is what is happening with the ending fund balance. And in all of these alternative scenarios, the ending fund balance is shrinking. It's just how fast is it shrinking? We have, past boards have implemented as policy, an exceptionally large reserve for this organization, but they've done so with a purpose in mind. Unique amongst all the other government services that we provide in the Valley, this one needs to have the ability to stand up in an emergency, in a public health emergency, and act quite quickly and robustly. And so I think we have a policy decision to make going forward. Alternatives include we could create a new fund for emergencies, or we could just keep in the back of our mind that we should have a larger reserve to be able to react to emergencies. Either way, the point is that as long as we're operating at a loss, we're decreasing our ability to respond to an emergency, a medical public health emergency. So yes, maybe some new revenue, as Chris pointed out, can save us as long as it doesn't come with new expenses at the same time. Some of it, and that's a concern. We'll all, you know, both lines presumably will go up ratably as inflation occurs, but we're not going to get inflation to revenue that doesn't include inflation to expenses, so that's not going to save us. And so we need to figure out what we're going to do. We got some hard decisions ahead.
Thank you. Let me weigh in a little bit. And I don't know the total answer here either as between a bond or a depreciation sinking fund, but I think it's critical that we recognize that this administration is being transparent about this issue. I brought this issue up. I remember my first year on the board when we were back in the old building under Dr. Sands, and you know, we were talking about, well, you know, what are we going to do when we have to repair this building? This was long before we ever moved out, and you know, none of the costs that have to be put forth to repair a building that is failing show up on your traditional budget. You know, it's the same thing with things like retirement funds that have to be paid out. You don't see those on a traditional balance sheet, but you have to plan for those things. Every building, whether you're leasing it or, you know, you own it or the county owns it and you're occupying it, if you have that obligation to repair it or to keep it up to speed, it's got a remaining useful life. And so it may be non-traditional to do a sinking fund or a depreciation fund. That doesn't bother me at all. Maybe that's not the right solution. Maybe we choose to go with issuing a bond instead. But at least it's an issue for discussion that's on the table, and we're not just sticking our heads in the sand and saying, you know, we're ignoring that piece of reality, because then everybody looks at what's in the accounts and we pretend like there's more there than is actually there, and it just doesn't work well that way. So I like the idea of getting this out on the table and making that decision one way or the other. We don't know those numbers exactly yet because we're not in our permanent building, but we should know those hopefully soon. And I would like to see that be part of the budget going forward so that we can make those hard decisions. And, you know, instead of just, again, deciding a budget 1 year at a time, that doesn't make sense. You know, that's not far enough out. You have to look at it 3 to 5 years out or more so that you know what's ahead. Otherwise, you're just kicking the can down the road to the next board and saying it's your problem to deal with. So I appreciate that we're now looking at that. And the ending fund balance that's sinking was the issue, the primary issue that Dr. Iser brought to us at the start of this budget cycle, which is if we don't make some changes, it's going to deplete rapidly. And we have made some changes, and we're headed in the right direction. But as Bob pointed out, we've still got a ways to go. So it's enlightening to get these things on the table and talk about them, and I appreciate that we're doing that now.
If I may, sir, we can look at, and I think the Finance Committee will report to you and give you a recommendation, but if you look on any one of the scenarios and you look at the budget that you have passed for this fiscal year 15, and you remember that we ended up with a 9.9% end fund balance, basically, that you then gave us a waiver in order to get under the 16.6, but we're now projecting for 15, and I believe you'll hear about this from the Finance Committee, the projection for FY 2015, and a lot of that is due to the sacrifices that the employees have given here. We did have the reduction in force. They could have asked for a higher wage increase in the union contracts, but they worked with us collaboratively to get through that. And the cost controls that we put in, decreasing travel, decreasing overtime, decreasing on-call pay, and a variety of other things. And you look at the bottom line of the projection for this year was $6.1 million for an end fund balance, and we're now up to 10.6, and that's due to the sacrifices that all the people that you've seen come and be honored here and all the people, most of the people in this room, have given up. And that starts us out and really starts us instead of at this level paying out, we're now starting at this level, which gives us that breathing space.
Thanks. Chris?
Thank you. I'm just reviewing the scenarios, and I'm not necessarily arguing against a sinking fund. I just don't think we should have a bond fund and the sinking fund, and I think scenario C or D kind of get us to that part of it. Are we acting on any of those today, or is that just more of an information component?
This was informational from my standpoint.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could. Bob? One other piece that we need to keep in mind is that I would characterize it as a significant amount of risk in the act of getting into our building. If things go as we planned, we can afford it, and without impacting our operating expenditure budget. If things go off kilter very much, we may end up coming in a bit over budget. There's all kinds of risks there, including not being able to move in by the time this thing ends, by the time the lease in this building ends, to right. The extensive build-out that we're talking about doing that right now is proposed to be something like 1.75 times the purchase price of the building, I think, in rehab costs and build-out costs. So there's a lot of risk in front of us that you need to keep in mind could cause this to get a lot looser than it looks right now.
And to me, the flexibility is we as a board could always make a determination if we adopt something to not put something into, you're right about the risk, but if a program area is underfunded or comes forward or an emergency along those lines within the community, we have to be able to, I think I'd rather put it into that than into a building. So we have those obligations that will come into play. So that was the purpose of the conversation. Thank you.
The conversation that we had with the Finance Committee was about this emergency services fund. And it's something that apparently the district used to have but then did away with. And, again, you all know that we spent probably $750,000 to $1 million last year in unbudgeted expenses related to tuberculosis. We are now tracking our time related to Ebola, and we're going to come up with many, 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 many thousands of dollars of time that we will have put into this. And people who are currently on grants who are working on Ebola will put their time in under 80-10, under a special fund that we set up, a 913 fund, Ebola. And so those funds come out of, as you pointed out, the which would have come out of an emergency services fund are just coming off of our bottom line right now. And that concerns me. I think in the long run, as we get into the budget for 16, is that that's something that I would recommend to you, is establishing that fund and then replenishing it at the end of each fiscal year, going into the next fiscal year.
Thank you. Unless there's anything else, we'll move on to number two, which is receive report and approve recommendations from the Finance Committee. I'm not sure if there's anything in additional to the budget, Bob, but we'll turn it over to you. Mr. Chair?
I don't know that there's – are we? Is there action proposed here?
Excuse me, the recommendation – is this
– I was making a big
recommendation. The recommendation from the Finance Committee was to accept the fiscal year 15 projection with the caveat that it may change pending the audit findings. And there was direction to staff to give some education regarding the sinking and depreciation fund, which is
right. Record. But this is not accepting the budget for 15 because we haven't seen any breakdown on sources of revenue or the categories of expense.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Which doesn't sound like a very robust motion to me.
Given all the discussion we had during the committee.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we know what accept the report.
Tried to couch it in enough ambiguity to not actually commit anybody to anything.
I think we know where we need to go, and I believe, unless you want to dissuade me from this belief, that we'll follow the recommendations that towards ending FY15 with that second category. An example is that we had money that we didn't have to, that we approved in 14 to put into the proprietary fund that we don't need to do now because of savings. But we'll just, with your permission, operate as if our projection is our real fund so that we don't have to put in money into funds that we don't need to.
A lot of contingency.
Was that vague enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess I would move that we accept the report, understanding that it is not certain.
Do we have a second, or do we need a second? We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that motion carries. Move to item number three, review, discuss establishing a sinking fund or emergency services fund. Have we sufficiently discussed that as well?
We've discussed that. I don't know. You can approve one of those, but it seems like our alternative course is to use the general fund for the emergency services that we're now conducting, and then as we go into the budget preparation for 16 is to bring back to you a variety of options, including a sinking fund or continuing the bond reserve fund, an emergency services fund, and how we should go forward.
Tim?
I would say, I mean, one option to think about would be if we get to June 30th of 2015 and we do actually have a $10.6 million ending fund balance, take some of that money and do create the emergency fund balance at that point. It can show on the books and it can sit there for that specific purpose.
And I thank you for that. I think that's a great idea, and we can look at it establishing that fund and funding it. Perhaps we'll have the budget already approved by then, but perhaps in June, so that or before that, I guess, when we do the budget, we'll have a pretty good idea. Thank you.
All right, so you go ahead and bring us options then. Number four is the building facilities update.
Sure. And several weeks ago, I talked to Mr. Sansom, who is in the audience here, and offered to allow him to come to present the alternative of the Boulevard Mall that you all discussed, that we discussed with you last month, and just as we did with North Las Vegas. And I think he's decided to take us up on our offer. So if we could ask him to step forward at this point, and he can do his presentation, and then Andy will give you the update that we have for you as well.
Good morning, board members. My name is Roland Sansone, and I bought the Boulevard about 11 months ago. I was a approached by several people, but one of them being the health district, in regards to buying a portion of the Dillard's building. And speaking to our general manager, Timo, he said that it would make a great partnership for the mall, for the synergy that it would bring, including the employees, the people that the health district services, because we provide 24-hour security. We have a food court. We have now a grocery store going into the mall there. We have car repair, shopping, and an employee would never have to leave the mall area. And we have public service. We have all the bus routes right in front. We are approximately a mile and a half from the Strip, a mile and a half from the airport, and less than half a mile from the convention center. And we have Sunrise Hospital on one side. I was given certain information, or Timo was given certain information, of what the health district's needs would be. So we responded with our numbers or our offer. We thought we would have an opportunity, because this has been somewhat misreflected, and we feel that we'd like an opportunity to present something that maybe be in the best interest of the health district, because, one, we think that we can come in, if we're able to compare what the build-out is that someone else is proposing, I'd like an opportunity to look at that and see maybe we can propose the same, either at the same or for less money or more of a savings. Timo, who knows the mall better than I, because he was there before with General Growth, maybe you can fill in, Timo, on some of these.
Your full name, Timo.
You have to say your name.
My name is Timo Cusella, General Manager of Boulevard Mall with Sansone Companies. And I just wanted to say that as far as the property's position on Maryland Parkway, proximity to the airport, and access to potential outbreak or emergency sites, I think represents the best position, and we would very much appreciate a second look at this site and see if we can improve our offer and make this work. On some of these items, on the comparison, you show no CAM charges for the potential site at Decatur. However, there's power, water, trash, sewer, porter service, landscaping, and all the associated expenses that come with maintaining your own property, not to mention the liability and potential risk involved in the unknown, what lies beneath the substrate and everything else.
Well, one thing I'd like to mention, being part of the mall, we actually would maintain the exterior of the building. Would not be a burden by the health district ongoing as a cost. There's a lot of costs in here that would come at no charge to the health district, and we'd like an opportunity to represent that.
Additionally, we have parking. We have an attached parking garage, which I think represents a terrific value in the covered parking, and then the security patrol, as Roland mentioned. The REA is listed here as prohibitive. But we don't believe that it is. We have support from our partners who would very much support this. So again, we would very much appreciate a second look and another opportunity to keep this door open. Thank you.
Thank you.
Andy? Can I ask a question?
I think there's a question.
I have a. What is an REA? I apologize.
My question too.
That's a reciprocal easement agreement, which. The developer, which is us now, is the main party to it, but we have Sears, Macy's, and JCPenney, whose consent would be required to certain changes. So they support this.
All right, thank you.
It's like a condo restriction that we've talked about in terms of 278 South Decatur, and that has been a stumbling block at that location that isn't there anymore.
Something we have on our computers, Mr. Glass.
Yes, this is on the
I'm working
on the portal.
All right.
I'm looking for it.
Oh, there it is, the very bottom.
Okay, maybe if I go back one slide so you can see. Oops.
Building presentation.
That's what it looks like if you're looking for it.
I think I need IT again.
IT?
Tim.
Thanks.
It's which? Okay, so now how do I get out of the... there we go. That's what it wasn't doing before.
Somebody else called.
Okay.
And what's this called?
I know. It's
building Dr. presentation.
Dr. I.
It's very bottom.
Is there a consensus that it's freezing in here?
Okay.
We'll see what we can do.
Middle-aged women that are cold. This is
I wonder if the doors are open. If that
have a meat
we can open the doors.
Dr. Iser?
Yes.
Over here.
Chris. Yes.
It may be easier on board members. It would certainly be easier on me if the numbering scheme for the files that we're calling up here were in agenda order and easily tied out to
we'll
agenda
do that.
Items.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay.
Help me if I have a hard copy.
What I've done with this presentation is to update the presentation that was made at the retreat in the last board meeting. And if you remember, we went over the overview of the requirements of the health district and what it is that that we actually need as far as a building, requiring at least 104,000 square feet. That we have approximately $16.5 million in a bond reserve fund. And with the construction of the building, that would deplete that bond reserve fund. We currently are in a building of a little better than 166,000 square feet, which is larger than we need, and that we would be moving, in addition to this facility, which is the Valley View facility, we would also be moving our occupancy from space that we rent at 400 Shadow and also the TB facility, which we have on Desert Lane. With that being said, what we put together was a comparison of the three buildings that we were looking at the time. And for this presentation, I've simply brought forward the additional information that we were given during the course of the past couple of weeks regarding the South Maryland Parkway or the Boulevard Mall property.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Go slow because the column format was not retained in our document.
Yeah.
And it gets worse.
When they turned it into a PDF, it just like went crazy.
Lost its column replacement.
We could make copies for you and postpone this item until after item 5 or 6, if that
would you like
to
have
to
you.
This is kind of hard to read.
Yeah, you can't read.
Mr. Chairman, that's what we would recommend, that we'll come back to you with item room numeral 5.4 after we'll go to 5.5 and then 5.6 if we need to, and we'll make copies for you.
Yes, we can take these out of order.
In some ways, you can see the lab background better on the, the one where the columns are blown out.
All right, we'll move on to number 6 then. And come back to 5.
This would be, Roman numeral 5, sub 5.
Okay, sorry about
next.
That. You're right.
And I believe you're up, sir.
That's the report and recommendations from the CHO Annual Review Committee. And I'm up, huh?
You were the chair, sir.
All right. That meeting occurred back in September, I believe, and somebody's going to need to remind me the exact numbers we finally agreed to recommend, but we recommended to renew Dr. Iser's contract.
For 2 years.
2 years, and then the increase is the...
The same as what we made for the union contract, 2.5% per year.
2.5%.
Because until I'm at the top of my scale.
And was there anything else that we added on? Tim, do you recall?
The only other change was we went to a three-month notice on both sides, and I believe that's it.
Correct. Okay. So renewal of the contract for 2 years, 2.5% increase, and then change in the notice on both sides to 3 months.
That's correct.
Yes.
In the attachment that you guys were provided, it only shows 1 year, so I need to edit that. I need to change that. That's okay. The only change to the document so far.
Do we have any discussion? Yes.
Thank you. Just for the future reference, we didn't have any minutes available on that meeting, and that was a public meeting. So if we could just make sure that we have the inclusions of that, the minutes from that, because we did have public testimony, and Dr. we have today your accomplishments, your goals, and that type of thing. But we also, that's where we generated the discussion about making sure that we had the employee satisfaction survey and a variety of other things that we kind of gave some direction. So if it's reflected in the minutes, that would be very helpful.
If we both last through this next year, we'll do that next year.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Any other discussion or comments?
I don't go away very easily.
Nor do I.
All right. So that's the recommendation of the committee. Would entertain a motion to approve that?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And thank you, Dr. Iser. We appreciate you going through the process with us and appreciate all the good things you're doing.
Thank you very much.
We will move then to number six, which is the longevity plan.
And we bring this forward to you from Mr. Jones' request from maybe 2 months ago. And we wanted to discuss with you what that current longevity plan is for management, how it compares to everyone else's, and then to get your direction on how you would like to go. And we can bring back then a petition, I think is what we would need to do, to change the longevity plan. So I believe that longevity plan is in your packet, at least a handout from Ms. Oakley.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Good morning. I'm Shirley Oakley. I'm the Human Resource Administrator. The Executive Longevity Plan has been in place since 1984, and it actually is very similar to the one at the county. It's 0.57% of the individual's annual salary times the number of years of service. Since most of the leadership team is relatively new, we only have one member that is currently on the Executive Longevity Plan at this time. And it'll be at least a year before we have our second member.
How many years do you have to be employed before you would start?
5 years.
Do we have...
So we have a four-year employee that is on the cusp of...
Yes.
Or a number of them, maybe.
One.
And she's my special legal counsel to my right. Do we have... I know that we had a handout, so if you could.
It's listed under E.
It's on our
and,
all the executive.
It's under E in your listed documents. Right. You can find it in the computer. Mm-hmm. Apple, so easy, only a child can use it.
Bob, it had some other name.
It's under executive longevity.
Executive longevity. Comparison FYE 2014.
Almost at the top of the agenda, or top of the program. Mr. Chair, I have a question while they're pulling that up.
Yes.
Thank you. The county got rid of it. It's only those existing employees that it affects in management and. Therefore, it only rolled up those individuals. We do not pay longevity any longer on any management, but we took that away, I want to say, 8-10 years ago. But if they were already in the system, it was a go-forward component. So on your list, other than Bonnie, who's a go-forward? Are you saying that each of these will roll up into qualifying for it at some point?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I thought we had... given direction to eliminate that, and so that's where I'm confused, because we talked, and we even, and our employees, I believe, are on a flat rate in the district. I would even be more comfortable with something along those lines. I don't believe in the percentage piece, because it can be huge, and the county's still negotiating with its SEIU component, but management, we had said we did not want management to have the 0.57 roll-up at longevity any longer.
Okay. I'm not aware of that part of the history in terms of when that probably occurred.
Bill's nodding his head. We had done that.
Yeah, we discussed it at budget time a year or two ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I think we never had a motion or an action to actually do something about it. We certainly talked about it, without a doubt.
Right.
I think we did. Maybe we need to go back and research it or put it on as an agenda item. But I personally do not believe we should be paying longevity, especially when they're at the higher end of the salaries. It's not. It's disparate to the employees who are on a lesser salary, and they get a flat fee. And these folks, with no disrespect, you're at 70, 89. I don't even know what your salaries are, and you get a that 0.57 percentage. It's a chunk of change. And so I just think longevity-wise for the management, it shouldn't be there. It's made up in the salary.
I think it's definitely correct. We've discussed it. I don't know whether it's come in the form of a motion that's been approved or not. So maybe some investigation needs to happen there to make that determination. And
it may even go back as far as Dr. Sams.
We'll review for the past 5 years for sure to see if there were any board actions taken on that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. With that said, do we want to give some direction today, or we want to wait for a report?
We can do either.
I mean, it's here and it's in front of us. I would say we ought to give it the direction that we intend to give it, mm-hmm. which I'm hearing is trying to create a balance between what management may receive versus what the rest of the staff may receive, and if that seems like a flat number is where Clark County may be going, or the, I don't know if the city's doing anything. What's going on in those areas?
I'm just talking about our SEIU members. I believe they have a flat rate.
We have the rest of the employees are on a flat rate. It's $110 per year service.
And so if that's the case, if you even want longevity for management, we eliminated it. So I think most of the local governments got rid of it for management purposes.
You're
because
talking just management.
Correct, just management, because it's in their salaries are far much higher than the other individuals. So I would personally support just no longevity for management. Mm-hmm. But
and did the county and the city, did you just eliminate it for people that were currently receiving it, or did they grandfather?
Anybody currently, at least in the county. If you qualified, it was 8 years ago, so no one now in the county management gets it. But those that were employed as a county management at that time continued. We did not take that away from them as a benefit.
And the city has eliminated longevity for management.
And how did you handle grandfathering or people that were currently receiving it?
Just for new hires.
Yeah, just for new hires.
Yeah, okay. As I was going to say, those who had come in before and that had been promised to them, we kept the promise. But then any new hires, none.
So we have some people here that are not new hires. Everybody here is hired and may have some expectation of what their agreement was when they came to work for the health district versus how to handle those that are not yet receiving any longevity versus new hires coming forward in the future. It would be a point of discussion.
We'll entertain that discussion.
So if I look at Bonnie would be the only one that would continue because that had been a previous component. I thought the direction of this board was no further because it's not in Dr. Iser's contract. It wasn't. We took it out of Dr. Sands's contract. It wasn't in Dr. Madaw's contract. Okay. So to me, anybody that hired after those times would not qualify. The only one that would grandfather would be Ms. Sorensen in looking at the way the dates of hire came into play.
If that's truly the case, then maybe we need to do some investigation back in time to figure that out before we decide anything. But
As I recall the discussion at that time was it was only for new hires. And so anybody, of course, as Chris has said, would have it if they had been hired by that time. The question is, did we vote on it? We're not remembering, did we have a formal vote on it? And if we didn't, then that puts us in a spot where we'd have to vote now, and then it would begin from this time forward.
The only comment that I'd have is that we have already made longevity payments. We make it two times of the year, so the first one has been made. So delaying a decision until next month will not have any impact on what direction we go. So that we'll review the minutes, make sure what's in there, and see whether there was a vote or not and exactly what the vote said, and then bring it back to the board next month.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. All right, are we on to number 7 or back to number 5? 4.
I think I don't see Jackie back, so why don't we go to sub 7?
She's right behind you.
Oh, she is. Oh, there she is. Do you have a hard copy?
So we're at four.
So we're back on number
back to
four.
Four.
Sorry about that.
Roman number four. Five, sub four.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Thank you. I'm going to hand them out because I can't see it.
Oh, this is much better to read.
Usually the technology works so well.
Yeah.
Were there any questions regarding what I had already reviewed regarding the requirements for the building on page two, the 104,000 square feet and...
I did have one, Andy, if I might. When you have your asterisk on satellite offices and warehouse.
Yes.
Do we have an anticipation of what that square footage might equate to?
With the size of that facility
you're not
is?
Let me rephrase that. Are you bringing that in?
No. No, those are excluded from what we are discussing.
And you won't need
discussing.
In the future to bring them in?
That's correct.
Okay.
We have not included that within these projections whatsoever. They're freestanding, separate, and off on their own.
Okay, and they're paid for, and are they leases?
Well, no, the satellite offices are all leases. The public health lab is in the same building as the warehouse, and that building we own.
Okay, and then the 400 shadow. Are you changing that over to whatever facility we move into, correct?
That's correct. 400. The new facility would accommodate all of the space that we currently have here at Valley View, the programs and services that are here. Also, the programs and services that are currently being delivered at 400 Shadow, which is currently a rented space, and the TB facility, which is currently actually in a county facility, that would be brought into the new building.
And so the 104,000 includes the 23,000 and the 2,150.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe, Andy, just for some background, we have other leases that would not go away, such as the North Las Vegas and possibly the East Las Vegas.
That is correct. If we move to page three, this is the same presentation that I gave to you at last month's board meeting regarding the Boulevard Mall property, with the exception that I added the fourth column of numbers. That fourth column reflects information that we received from the developer on October 16th, proposing that the health district purchase 115,000 square feet of that Dillard's building. The Dillard's building, if you remember, when you look at the entire building, is 198,000 square feet. And you'll see that reflected under total. So instead, we would purchase 115,000 square feet, which would be divided into the first floor and the second floor, that the purchase price would be based on a square footage price of $75 per square feet, which ends up with a total cost of $8.625 million for the purchase price. As we have had PGAL look at our build-out costs, the build-out costs for that 115,000 square feet would be approximately $7.5 million. I don't know why my arrow keeps going away. $7.5 million dollars. The furniture costs would be $2.5 million. That the property would include the ability to use the surface parking that is currently at the site, as well as the 250 or so space parking ramp that is connected to the Dillard's building, the former Dillard's building. In addition to that, there would be a CAM charge of a minimum of $124,000 per year
and that we'd still have to address the issue of the chorea or the REA. Sometimes it's called REA, sometimes it's called chorea, C-O-R-E-A. And that we also have excellent transportation at the site. If we then progress to the next page, which is 278 South Decatur.
If we were to take a look at the Maryland Parkway, is the usable space is all on second floor or is it on first floor?
No, it would be a combination of the first floor and the second floor. What we've been told by the developer is that he would like to preserve some space on the first floor for retail so that we would only be able to occupy a portion of that first floor, and the other portion would be reserved for retail occupancy.
All of the second floor and part of the first.
No, that's not the way it's represented here. If we did one and a half floors, that would be the column that would represent if we did all of the second floor and part of the first, and that would be in the second column of numbers. The purchase price changes accordingly.
So the revised proposal on the 16th is part of the second floor and part of the first floor.
That's correct.
Okay. Andy, does this take into account the parking of district vehicles that would have to be left overnight and, you know, the motor pool, so to speak?
We haven't gone that far in the discussion. So, you know, there's parking available. How we'd be able to provide it for the motor pool has not been discussed. I will say that there is ample parking at the site to be able to accommodate that, but we haven't talked about that with the developer.
Yes. Is there any accommodation for any windows either in the old Target building or the Dillard's building?
At the present time, these costs are based upon no windows in either building, and so that we kept everything the same. The next page reflects exactly what was presented at the last board meeting and the page on which we made the board decision to proceed with the purchase of 278 Decatur, the former Target building. The building itself has 116,000 square feet. Our purchase price is $6.5 million. Our build-out costs total for furniture as well as build-out is $9 million. We have 526 parking spaces that are designated as our own with designated motor pool parking. Secure parking for all of our district vehicles would be included in this. There are no cam charges. There is no chorea involved with this.
Transportation.
And the transportation is excellent. We're only two blocks from where we currently exist, so that the Target building is within the service area of those that we are servicing and on an excellent transportation line. So it's both in the neighborhood of those we serve as well as served excellently by transportation and is immediately adjacent to the medical district.
The other thing that I see really at Decatur versus Maryland is for those people that don't use public transit to get to the district, you have freeway access that is a little bit harder to get if you're down on Maryland Parkway. If you're sending staff
right
from the central location to go out to where they need to go, they're going to drive. They've got freeway access. They're going to save some time.
The freeway access is much closer at the Target facility than it is, correct.
In fact, you can see.
Yes. Yeah, if you go out our back entrance towards Meadows Mall and look to your left, you'll see a big kiosky thing and a big blank old Target sign. It doesn't have the bullet on it anymore, but you can see it right there. So for those of you who haven't, I'd advise you on your way home today is just take a left out of the parking lot. Go across Decatur and almost immediately turn in right, and you'll see the old Target store right there.
I was just going to say, in fact, you can see the signage from the freeway That's how close the freeway is.
That's correct.
That's correct. And if I may add that both locations are excellent for public transportation. Both locations are excellent for the populations that we serve. Parking is generally excellent at both. So it comes down to other considerations and why we recommended to you the target last month.
I'd just like to add one thing. I believe that the medical district is going to soon burst with expansion. Everything now indicates that the as long as the county still is willing to help with 10 acres of land, but whatever, it appears that the new School of Medicine for Southern Nevada is going to be there, and it seems to me it would be beneficial to the health district when they're all wellness involved to be that close to what's going to be expanding there and maybe even reap some benefits from the new school.
Mr. Sansone also pointed out quite correctly that we'd be close to a hospital there, but again, you know, I'm from the Midwest. Spitting distance basically from where we are now or where we would be is UMC and Valley Hospitals, two of our major partners as well.
What I've again prepared is a comparison of the two buildings based upon the most recent information that we have from the developer. And again, we see that from the financial standpoint and in the expenditure standpoint, that with the purchase of the Boulevard Mall property as it's presented, it would be a total of $18.6 million, whereas with the purchase of the Target building would be $15.5 million. So there's a $3 million difference on the purchase price. On top of that, we have the CAM charges. And the CAM charges, we actually have two different numbers from the developer. The original, which is what was presented on the sheets that you have, is at 9 cents per square foot per month. And the revised is 16 cents per square foot per month. So that we have a significant CAM charge, and that translates to $221,000 a year in CAM charges that we have. And the second major issue that we have is the CORREA, which is a very significant document from our perspective from the legal standpoint. I don't know if Annette would like to make any comment on that, but it's...
The CORREA, restrictive easement, the one that we have for Dillard says that there's an exception for retail. Only retail can be had there. Now, according to the representation made today, they've got an agreement with, or they believe they can get an agreement with Sears and Penney's and Macy's, who are all signatories on this REA. And that would be required to allow public health uses on the Dillard property. That issue has already been resolved with the Target property. So there's no restriction to our taking over the property and beginning our public health services.
And you gave us direction last month to go forward at finalizing an agreement. We are probably within days of signing that agreement with the Target building. And we do have, I'm not sure if, I think it is in this packet, of what that timeline would be of how long it would take to final to do the closing, to start the construction, and so on. And so we're well on our way to doing that. I can look at Mr. Singer and just ask him how close.
He's behind you.
You can't look at him over there.
How close are we to being able to sign that agreement so that we can move forward?
There you go. Couple That's days, what I want to see.
Yes, please.
That's not in our packet, Andy.
This is the project schedule as...
Good morning, Larry Singer. We're in the final negotiations on the language. There's some language issues within the contract. We have to deal with Target's language. We have to deal with language for the owner of what we call the shops, the seller of what we're calling the shops. We're pretty close on that. I don't know if the attorneys talked yesterday, but I think they're scheduled, or at least they've all agreed that they're going to try to get together on the phone today and finalize a purchase and sale agreement. as Dr. Reiser said, and as Andy said, the Korea issue is resolved at the Target, so they have all the necessary language there that satisfies the attorneys on that.
We've also asked PGAL just to take a second look at the estimates that they've put together, and if you'd like, we have representatives from PGAL here to talk about the differences between the two buildings and why there are differences in the construction costs that would be experienced. And if you'd like to have them come up, they can.
Yeah, I would like to ask a question about that. Are they here? Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. But neither one will blow down, right, here. Sorry? Neither one will blow down.
Right. I'm just going to get out of here.
Another question. Ask a question real quick.
Got that bone going.
I know.
Is the cost comparison on the PGAL document the same as the cost comparison in the other document?
Yes.
Because it's not.
Yes.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Chris Larson with PGAL. The cost comparisons, we've revisited trying to get them both apples to apples because really either building can work, in our opinion. We're obviously a little bit more familiar with the Target because we have been working on it for a couple months or a couple weeks. So the difference in the cost that we started was to equalize, and right now, going back through the programming, we're at 108,000 square feet, and so using the same per square foot cost for construction in each building, both utilizing labor wage rates, which we know are a requirement, including the generator, both need restroom upgrades or expansion to meet a business and lab class. We came up with $4,621,065, so just sort of an equalizer for both projects. One of the differences in reviewing the Dillards, and some of the numbers have changed a little bit because we've had other conversations with some of our engineers and stuff. We believe that the cooling tower needs to be replaced. The roof needs to be repaired or replaced. In talking with estimators, we've budgeted this at sort of the lowest replace number. It's possible it could be repaired, but there are some issues that need to be addressed, whereas the Target building, the roof is in really very good shape. It's a single-ply roof. It was, I believe, redone in 2007. An elevator would be required because we are going to have two floors, either enlarging the existing one or putting in a new one, depending on where in the building we are. And then we also feel there's an increased amount of demolition required in the interior of the Dillard's because the Dillard's, obviously being a higher-end retail store, had a lot more build-out. There are a lot more hard ceilings, other types of finishes, differences in tile, flooring, carpeting, marble, and a lot of build-out casework areas that are still in place, whereas the Target, once they've taken all the shelving and stuff out, is almost a clean slate, has just a lay-in ceiling. It works really well for the health district program. Taking those numbers, plan check, permit fees, general conditions, and just sort of using the same formulas all the way down, we came out with a construction, total construction budget. Oh, let me back up. Adding in contingencies, both a design, because we're still designing, construction contingency, the soft costs, including architecture, engineering fees, move costs, which would be identical, and I think we had identified $225,000 last time, and then the furniture, fixtures, and equipment utilizing the same number. We came up with total construction budgets, as you can see, of the Dillard's at about $9.9 million and the Target at $8.9 million. And then at the request, we've added in the purchase price of both and thus the total project costs of, as Andy mentioned earlier. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
One other addition that I need to point out is the very great help that the City of Las Vegas has been to us in looking at the design-build concept and in the access to potentially some redevelopment funds that we wouldn't have at the other facility.
Which facility?
At the Target. At the Target, because that's within the city limits and within a designated zone that we could get some redevelopment funds from the city. Yeah. And Mr. Beers, you may correct me, but I think it's at least $200,000 for the exterior changes that might need to be made or restriping the parking lot. But that's what we've met with Shawnee about that, and that's what we think we can get.
Buildings?
Because we have two buildings there, two properties, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably correct.
I have a question about the timing. Is the 7 months assuming a design build? Is that?
No, actually, it's we're using the term design build thrown out. We're actually looking at a construction manager and bidding this and having them bid it process. And so that's how we've based everything on this.
Question. Tim.
So once we got to the finished product on either one of these projects, could you give a best guess as to the length of life of the building itself and or the infrastructure around it, sewer, electric, et cetera? What's it look like for the next 20 years in these buildings?
I think either one of them is a 20 to 30, maybe even longer life. I mean, they're both built as retail buildings, which aren't built as, say, a county building or city or, you know, an institution. But they're both okay construction. They should.
And I think that's assuming that the appropriate maintenance happens throughout that period.
I mean, they're both at some point going to need to probably to be re-roofed, their mechanical systems upgraded, and we've included in these numbers is some money for both of them on some mechanical system work on it.
Chris.
So you're now looking at a construction manager at risk or just a straight?
At risk.
At risk. And then I mentioned that this is all still subject to a prevailing wage, so any cost would have to be included in that part of it. I voted for the two weeks ago, whenever we did it, with the fallback position of Dillard's. It's my district. I am prejudiced in that way. I do think it would be a wonderful coupling. There's cost factors that you don't always anticipate architecturally, engineering-wise, or other. The convenience for the employees, the ability for them to get around, the convenience for our constituents. While we may be near a highway, most of the folks that use our services don't drive. They ride the bus, and the best location really is the Maryland Parkway corridor. It's there for every bus route comes in through that part of it. So I just always, whenever we look at anything like that, I do think you have to look at those ancillary costs that are benefits to people, the 24-hour security, the covered parking, all of that is more of a benefit to the employees in the long run. I totally respect Lois, though. I understand she wants to, the medical district is close by, and I know that that's her passion, mine as well. I mean, trying to work together is, if we'd gotten the other $500,000 from the negotiations with the health district, we'd be able to implode that building and move further forward, but unfortunately, didn't get the support on that part of it, so we're still going to have to come up with that. We will do the $500,000 to do the asbestos remover for the school of medicine, but we still need some help, and maybe there might be some redevelopment dollars to get us to that piece for Lois. I still believe Dillard's is there. I would like to ask for an indulgence just to see if Mr. Sansone could at least respond to whether they think the numbers still reflect what they were, because I don't know if there was back and forth or give and take on this, or if it was just we kind of want this, and this is where we're going. So I just want to make sure that they have their day, if that's the case.
I think it's windy forecast.
It's a windy forecast? Oh.
Implosion.
Cynthia.
Just in looking at this, the CAM fees are huge here, but is there something in the budget that covers the maintenance and the landscaping, et cetera, in the Target building? I don't see anything that reflects that.
We haven't addressed the maintenance of the building from that standpoint.
We've included that, and the way that we did that is that we looked at the costs that we currently have for our operating, our security and our trash and all that, and we've included that in both of our estimates as we brought forth our budgets, as you saw before. Yeah. So the two buildings are equal from that standpoint, so that the CAM charges are purely in addition to anything that we are currently experiencing.
All right, thank you.
And in fairness, I mean, that may need to be clarified.
Well, in this building as well as the Target building.
Dr. Osgood.
It would be in addition to.
I haven't brought this up, but I'm, because I know how I'm going to vote. I'll be very honest. I want to vote for the one that's the $15 million Target building, and I support what we've just done. But I have another concern that I haven't brought up before, and that is I'm sort of concerned of sharing a health district building with a retail, with the same building with a retail space, just because of the potential infectious disease issue that may surface once a year. I just wanted you to know that I'm concerned about
Thank
that.
You.
It may only happen once a year, but that's all it takes.
We also, if I may, the CAM fees by themselves are an additional fee. I think we've talked about that a couple of times. That would help that we haven't put into that three-year forecasted budget, and would offset some of the savings we would get from renegotiating leases and getting out of 400, for example, in a timely fashion. So those charges would be ongoing and would increase year by year with inflation or however they're negotiated. You all know how I feel. There are, I think, to me, stronger benefits of being in the Target location than being in the Dillard Mall location. The fact that we're only, I tried to measure it today, we're less than a mile. I'm probably 0.75 of a mile. Just moving there will be significantly less expensive than trying to move across the city down to the Dillard's. And I think there are a variety of reasons that we've talked about those four little storefronts that go along with it and how those can be open actually at different hours than the rest of our building has to be, so that we could have vital records open at different hours. We could have Mary Ellen's program for EMS and trauma open at different hours, and the access into the Target building for ambulances and fire trucks that they have to inspect, I think, will be much easier at that location as well. We've already talked internally about how to do that. So I strongly recommend, you've already given us a direction. Unless you give us other direction, we will just continue with the direction that we got last month.
Are we finished with the presentation? Because I do want to give Mr. Sansone and his group an opportunity to respond if they would like to. Come on up.
I'd buy the $15 million building, too. Wouldn't make sense to pay more. But I don't feel, or our team or people that were involved in this were given all the facts, so we responded accordingly. And with that, you're right. It's 15 and we're more. But we weren't given the opportunity. Timo just says to me, maybe, Roland, you want to donate $1 million to them to bring it up even. Maybe that's what I should do. You bring up a good point. It shouldn't share with the retail, but we can make it so it doesn't. But this is part of negotiations. At the end, if you do it open book, I'm not a contractor. I'm going to bid it out. And in our office, it comes in closed envelopes, and we open it. And you'll notice at the mall, I'm going to have, at the end, about three contractors. Low bid after we qualify them. I've heard things here that I hadn't been aware of. You're right. There's a lot of pros to being at the Target building. I think there's advantages to being at the Boulevard. At the Boulevard, there's room for expansion if they needed to expand. If for some reason they wanted to contract, I'd be willing to buy it back. There's the answer to that, so it gives the risk out of it. The other one there is that at the Boulevard, we would maintain the exterior of the building. But I'm confused by this CAM. Common area maintenance charges to us are just a pass-through. They're not a profit center. We all have to pay water, power, trash. So it's not as though they're at the Dillard's building, you have to pay them, and at the Target building, they're included. I'm confused because you don't pay the taxes, but you do have to pay for water, power, trash taxes. We're not charging for the security. The security, the 24-hour security, that's just part of the mall. The building would benefit by it, but it's not as though it's being passed on to you. So we wanted just an opportunity to be able to, and I had mentioned to Timo that we would, if we had a space plan, and I'd be willing to pay for it, and I'd be moved quickly, we could do a space plan within a week, just a schematic drawing so I could bid it out and say, this is it, the Target is a better deal for you, go there. But if not, maybe there's an opportunity where the numbers are much closer and then look at the sites closer.
Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One discussion we haven't had yet is backing up the processes involved in both options backwards from the end of our lease. Because if we aren't out of here by the end of our lease, my understanding is we have a one-year extension, and that would be very expensive.
The Tibertis have come back to us with a month-to-month extension without the penalty that is in our current contract with them. So we give them enough time, and there are always delays, but we expect to be out of this building with that facility by, I think it's July or August of next year, which will give us 1 to 2 months of, at the most, we hope, of paying rent here.
That facility being Target?
Yes.
Keep in mind that I could do a turnkey with no cost overrun, no change orders that would run into the hundreds of thousands.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I just want to make sure, because we would be using union labor for the Target. Is that what you propose to?
No. The deal with me is that there would be a schematic drawing of what your needs are, and we would sell you the building with the improvements.
Okay.
From what I'm hearing, I think that there are pros and cons on both sides of the coin. We are knee-deep in this other negotiation, and we also move forward based on the information we have at the time, and that's what we did a month ago when we made the decision to do that. I don't think anything prevents you from submitting your proposal. We certainly would want to keep it as a backup if this one, the Target building doesn't go through. I'm hesitant to, at least from my perspective, I'm not speaking on behalf of everybody else, but I'm hesitant to back up at this point. We've backed up many times on our building search already over the past, 3-4 years, and we need to get into a building. So from my perspective, there may be advantages of going to the Boulevard Mall, but I think there are a lot of advantages to going to Target as well, and I just don't see that we can delay any longer in moving forward. Others may disagree with that, but I'm interested to see what numbers you want to throw out at us, too. I mean, if you were telling me today that you were going to save us $3 million, that would be another story. I might say, well, okay, it's worth backing up, but at this point, I'm not hearing that. I'm just hearing we may be able to beat the other proposal, so... that's my perspective on it.
And that's fair. I just wish we'd negotiated. I didn't realize that there'd not been the counter back and forth to say this is what we did versus what was suggested. And so I think that's where the frustration came in. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm not privy to what has or hasn't happened there, but anyone else wishing to weigh in on this? Mary Beth.
I think Commissioner G has a good point. The negotiations would have been nice to have because it probably would have benefited the district in having probably an overall lower cost. But I think the thing that concerns me is the Korea restrictions. Just that seems to be a major difference, and was just wondering how that could be resolved.
I personally talked to Sears, head of real estate, and to Macy's, both. They're not opposed to it. They realize this is an urban mall and that the partnership would work well between the mall, meaning because of the amount of employees that would possibly shop in the mall, the people that visit the mall. Could I get it in writing? Yeah, it may take me 10 days or 15 days, but I don't think it would take more because everyone wants what's good for the mall.
Anyone else? All right. So we don't really have action to take on this unless we want to change course, right?
That's correct.
May I make a suggestion?
Yes.
My thought, continue on with the $15 million. It is a good deal. I don't have the facts, so I can't even compete against it. But if someone from the health district would come and meet with our architect and give us a schematic drawing of how many rooms, what it is they need, I can move very quickly. And I'm going to say before you sign the contract, I could have a number, and then you can say, you know what, we're going to stay with that deal. I'm not a contract. All I can say is that, and I'm willing to expend the dollars. And if that schematic drawing, and I can get a contractor to actually give me, then it's locked in. There are no change orders. There's no surprises to anybody.
Do we have the ability to do that quickly?
I don't know how quickly we can do that, but certainly Chris from PGAL can work with his folks. I can tell you that we did do negotiations with Roland and asked him several times for several different items, including the fact that there's a plume of PERC that goes underneath there and getting the environmental assessment. It took weeks to get documentation on that, and I would not go forward with negotiations without knowing some of these facts. Exactly where within the mall, within the Dillard's, we've asked him several times to give us what that layout would be, and we still don't know what that is. So we haven't gotten enough information, despite many requests, and I think you'd agree with that, to be able to move forward in negotiations, to go to that next step, the same way that you wouldn't do if you were buying a condo or a house on your own. You'd need to know whether the building is safe, related to the PERC issue, and what exactly you're buying, and we still don't know that.
We had the building tested, and it is safe, and we provided the documents. I'm sorry, the people we asked to do it just don't move as quick as we'd like them to. The other concern is that I'm flexible. I don't know what their needs are, so he's right. I didn't provide because I don't know. But if somebody says, this won't cost anybody anything, continue on your track. If someone would spend an hour and just say, look, this is the layout, what we're going to need, I'd be have our architect, I'll expend the dollars, we'll get a price, and then.
Yeah, and if we can do that, I would be all in favor of that. Again, I would not recommend that we back up. I think we go full steam ahead, and if it doesn't go through as planned, then we have a backup plan, and that's always good to have.
And I will be signing documents within the next week, we think. So you need to give me other direction to the contrary unless you don't want me to sign those documents as you have directed me to do last month. That would require board action, I believe.
All right. Unless we have a motion to that effect, we will just proceed business as usual.
I would just add that if we do this again, I would like to see this moved up in the agenda to the top so that our private sector professionals, Larry, for example, can do their business and move on.
Thank you. So for clarification, we're going forward. If there's a commitment to have the architect sit down with Mr. Sansone, if they can come up with a schematic in a week, then at least that would be something that's taken a look at, just so that we're clear on what we're saying.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anybody saying don't sign the contract if it goes through. So, but I have no problem with providing the information and getting some numbers back from Mr. Sansone and his group. So,
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to bring our construction folks back up and let us know if they think they can achieve that without spending very much money?
And that's a good point. It does cost us money to do that.
I would use my own architects, and I would pay for that. No
I know,
cost.
But I'm not sure that our side is able to give you what you need to put your side to work on it. That's, you understand what I'm saying?
Come on up if you have a response.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. We've just finished programming and started blocking, so we have a very conceptual blocking program, and we looked at the target 6-8 months ago. We can certainly share the program with, which says how many offices are hard-walled and how many are not, and, you know.
Go from there?
Sure.
I would just warn you, Ms. Sanson, it may not be enough information. We may not be far enough along in that process.
And we can share what we know and what we've got, so it's not a problem.
We built out over 60,000 square feet of medical, and we've been between 45 and 48.
You've got to do it on the mic.
Would you come up here?
Over by St. Rose Hospital, we built out approximately 60,000 square feet of medical and dental, a lot more intense because of what dental requires. But we built those up between $46 and $48 a square foot, and that's impacting with a lot of cabinets and sewer hookup fees. But I was told that, Timo was told that there was a certain amount that the health district required for certain labs and so forth. So we guessed, and Timo guessed, and we increased that up to that $58, $60 a foot. But we feel more aggressively, we can come in at a much better number. But I understand you're down a path, and I know what that's like, and it's hard to change, and the time is short. I think our construction moves quicker than others, but I feel you're in a predicament.
No one ever tells us to slow down.
We do appreciate you coming out today and showing interest in the project, and we'd encourage you to get us what you can as quickly as possible.
Okay.
We'll get that to you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Unless there's any further discussion, we'll move on to item Roman numeral 5, number 7, right?
Right, and that is, I believe, your proposed meeting schedule for next month.
Yes.
And you have two sheets in front of you. One looks like a calendar. One is listed. And the only big changes from this year is that we would move the evening meeting up by at least a month so that we truly have the opportunity for the public to come in and discuss with us their concerns about our budget. And then in November, instead of having a Monday meeting, as we, I think we have scheduled this month, we'll move it just one whole week earlier so that at least we stay on a Thursday at the same time.
Any objections to that? So the date would be which date?
Are you talking about the March date? That the evening date would be March 23rd. And last year, or in 14, preparing for 15, I believe that was in April, which was, in retrospect, after the fact, after you needed to vote on a budget. And then the other change would be, instead of the Monday, which would be the 19th, the 23rd of November, which is what it sort of is here equivalently, it would be the 19th.
That's not Thanksgiving Day, is it?
No, Thanksgiving is the 26th.
So we're going to meet on Thursday, the 23rd.
In March, it would be Monday, the 23rd. Is that correct? Hold on.
I think this is it. Right?
Monday, the 23rd.
Yes.
Yeah, in the evening at 5 p.m. And then the other change would be to go to November 19th.
Got it. Okay.
But you have the list in front of you, so you can put it into your calendars. And also, I think we can send an invitation out to you.
Yeah, I would just request that you remind us when those times come.
We could send an invitation out to you now with these dates, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
Do we need a motion on that?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No, motion carries. We'll move to the board reports. Anyone wishing to report? We have no board reports. Move on to the health officer and staff reports and turn the time back to Dr. Iser.
I have prepared to do an hour presentation on Ebola that I did not think you wanted. You certainly have opportunities throughout the valley several times a week to come to one of my other presentations or one of our other presentations. It is on our website if you want to look at it, and we update it routinely with different numbers, geography, and a variety of other things. You've heard me say publicly and to the media that we are as prepared as any city our size or larger. That's not to say that we're not as prepared as cities smaller than us, but we are. For example, I listened in to a California Department of Health briefing that they had with their EMSA, which is Emergency Medical Services, just last week. Might have actually been this week. I lose track of time these days. Days seem to run into each other. And I can tell you that our planning has been more advanced than the state of California's here in Southern Nevada. I can't speak. So I can't say that necessarily for the state, but I can tell you for our planning that we are. We have worked with our hospitals to designate hospitals where Ebola patients will go, and I will not tell you that publicly, and I will not tell the media that publicly for security reasons. We have had now three meetings with our EMS providers, including one yesterday. We've met with the I've met with the airport Customs and Border Patrol with Rosemary, and I will have to look at her name, to pronounce her last name, who's the authority out there, and with their security. And they are expediting passes for us to be able to get behind security lines very quickly if we need to help them. They are, I think, pleased with our response. We're available to help them anytime that they might need it. We have had meetings with our hospital infection control managers, including, I think this week some came, but one very early on, about 2 months ago now, and I believe we have another one coming up next week. So not only are we meeting with all of the people that I think you could guess that we should be meeting with, but we're meeting with them numerous times. Our website is built out with very good tools, again, with this briefing document for anyone to use, and this is just so you know, I tell anyone, download our presentation. I don't care if you use your name on it. I don't care if you put your logo on it, whether it's Washoe County Health District or San Bernardino. I don't care, but we think these tools are excellent. We've been lauded by our EMS and first responder community and our hospitals. I left a few minutes ago to take a call from one of our hospital systems. So I think that as best we can plan, and let me back up and say that everyone in this country learned from what happened in Dallas. CDC learned, Dallas certainly learned, that hospital learned. We learned from the mistakes and the things that they did correct in those situations. We've turned those out to our community. So I think that unless you have a suggestion to how to increase my days, then we're going to continue forging ahead. I checked my hours over the last week and this week, and it's about it's almost 40 hours. Of course, I put in more than 80. So just checking on that account, it's I think I'm counting 36 hours over those 2 weeks. We have set up a special accounting, as I mentioned to you earlier, so that people can charge their time when they're doing activities related to Ebola, and not charge them to a grant if they're on a grant program. We have teams that are available, strike teams, to go out and assist our community in basically three or four different areas. One is to gather information, which was a problem for the airport incident a week ago, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, to provide consultation on site to identify high risk, medium risk, low risk patients. And then if we need to start the contact tracing that we talked about with our recognition of our disease investigators, so that we can start it right there if we need to at the airport. And then we've been asked to see if we can take temperatures if we have to. So our go bags contain appropriate protective equipment, and I hope as of today we'll have those non-contact thermometers in them. And Ms. Rezitar is our lead for that. And as I've told everyone in many locations, this is a command kind of performance, and the people who are assigned to her teams will do what she says when she says, not to compromise their safety or any other way, but when we need to respond, we need to respond. And I think that you all can appreciate us being able to do that to help our community and keep it safe. Do you want more detail than that? Do you want me to show you the presentation? It's pretty.
Well done. I see.
You've seen it, so.
Thank you.
I could go into other areas, but I think that's enough for me.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't mind having an email notification of when you're going to give those presentations.
Yes, sure. That would be good.
Sure. I think we've got one set up with you all very soon. We have reached out to city and county managers. I've written Don a couple of times to see if he wants us to come to give it publicly to the county commission. And we would do either a department heads meeting or a public meeting, or both, depending on what you wanted and how much time you'll give me. My shortest presentation was yesterday with the grade school principals at about 15 minutes. Our longest really runs with questions about an hour.
All right, thank you.
And I haven't been to Boulder City recently.
Just come on out.
Okay.
All right, you have the informational items before you, and then we will move to our final public comment. Anyone wishing to speak? Okay, well, It's been a nice long meeting today. Our numbers have dwindled way down from the start. Thank you for all of you that stuck it out to the very end. I won't say bitter end. It was a good meeting.
Are you right on the line between Pacific Standard and Pacific Daylight?
Yes. Yeah, we're a little confused there, aren't we?
You are.
You specifically have one leg in each time zone.
All right. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.